John's back by the looks of it, but maybe we should give him some actual white space in the recordings or something. I mean, if there's no chat, really. Someone might want to chat here later, I'm thinking. If not, it's over, isn't it?
Oh, it's not over. I'm still configuring crap.
I wonder if the mumble, I don't know how you guys process the feed, but I know Audacity has that automatic feature to sort of like minimize
John Go moved in from OpenSpeak on the server
to minimize like white empty noise. I think that's a great feature.
Well, I Audacity needs that,
that
sure.
before they put it out as an episode.
Right, this looks like a good time for another break because nothing much is going on.
I'm just playing around with command line RSS readers. Playing around with NewsButer right now.
I don't really use an RSS. No, I don't use RSS reader.
I use it for downloading torrent and NZP files and podcasts.
Yeah, to be honest, the whole Linux news thing. I used to really be very much like into that, going onto all these articles and seeing, you know, what's going on and all that, especially years ago. And then with something like Identical, when I got on that, I could just follow Rory Sestowitz and he would link to all the like a lot of stuff and I could go on from that. And it all changed to Pump.io and he doesn't really And he doesn't really use Identica anymore. That really did split the Identica community, I think. A lot of people carried on with different status net sites. But I used to kind of follow him. I used to go on my timeline a lot and just go through 50 pages of whatever and going on different links and so on. And then it all kind of changed with the Pump.io switch and I don't really, and obviously I don't do that anymore, and I don't really follow Linux news anymore. I occasionally go on the site, so I seem to pick up the main stories anyway, and a lot of the articles are pretty much the same, and they have been for years, and like what they're like and stuff anyway, so.
I don't use it for, I use Usenet strictly for the binaries. And I don't do any social networking whatsoever other than IRC.
Yeah, I'm basically not doing social network. I gave Pump.io I did some messages here and there, and I realized, you know what, I've only got so many followers, and there's not that many people following me, and you might get a reply here and there, but it just didn't feel like it was worth doing it in my case. So social networking, I just don't really bother with that anymore. I never really did properly anyway. So got Facebook, but I don't really use that. And but IRC, you call that social networking? I suppose it is really, but I think more I would call that chat room. So not it's not a social networking site. But yeah, I like IRC. IRC is great, I think.
Yeah, I get all of my TV shows and crap from Usenet and torrents, so that's why I'm interested in those and just trying to set up something new and automatic on this router I'm playing with.
Well, you told that to all the anti-piracy people publicly.
It's legal in Canada, man.
Oh, is it?
Yeah, we pay this nice tax on our hard drives and flash drives.
Yeah. I've heard something about that. I thought, yeah, that must be in Canada. Oh, actually, no. Didn't I think Holland might be doing something like that as well? I'm not sure quite though.
I think most of the Commonwealth countries do something like that.
Well, not the UK.
As I said, most. Yeah, they're trying to in the Canadian legislature, they're trying to get rid of the ability to download but keep the tax.
Oh.
So what would the tax be on?
It's recordable media, tapes, DVDs, blank CD-ROMs, flash media, like USB thumb drives, SD cards, compact flash, any type of removable media, internal and external hard drives, pretty much everything, man. It started out as just being CD-ROMs, and then it moved to CD and DVD-ROMs, and then it removed to any removable storage media.
So now, if you guys pay that tax, is it is it like per item, or do you, I guess, like, is that a built-in tax where, like, you just, because I guess there's I don't know, I guess here you can pay like a liquor tax, but is it built into the price of the
it's built in. As the consumer don't see it.
Okay. Yeah, because that would be hard to do, because whenever you tax different items different way, especially like something you can get from, say, like a grocery store or something like that, it would be hard to calculate it as a consumer.
I'm sure what I do is not technically legal, but it's also not technically illegal. I'm under the opinion that if you have the ability to record TV shows from a channel, you have the ability to download them.
Yeah, I think I would be of that opinion also.
Unless I'm downloading them in a higher quality than I can record them. Sketchy there. Like, I think it's okay to download a TV rip, but it's not so okay to download a Blu-ray or a DVD rip.
But see, I guess the other thing, too, is, you know, if you download something, like, say you buy a movie basically you rent a movie from Netflix, right? But also you can buy movies from Netflix. And if I was to do that, I would want to be able to make a backup copy of that, because, you know, once, say, if Netflix ever went away, you know, would they be willing to give you your item or movie that you purchased from them, or are you just like up the creek?
Amazon would probably be a better example of that. Amazon, you can rent or buy movies, and they offer a Windows only software that you can download the movie to watch offline. The last time I remember reading about it, there was a limit. You could only have 5 movies downloaded at a time in a local cache at the quality you wanted, and you could you could only watch it on Windows. It didn't work on anything else.
So if you had more than that local cache, you'd have to basically download it from them again if you wanted to watch it.
Yeah, and they if I was remembering when I was reading it, it did some sort of authorization on the local copies that you had. Like, it gave them a key, and then it would revoke the key if you, like, you download 5 movies that you bought, and then you downloaded the 6th one, it revokes the key of the first movie, so you can't watch it. You can still have it in your possession, but it's encrypted and you can't watch it.
So basically, if it's encrypted and you can't watch it, it's not really in your possession.
No, it's not free. It's all DRM stuff, but that's to keep you from giving it to your friends.
You know, I was looking, reading something online, and they were saying that the Game of Thrones series and also Breaking Bad was the most pirated they were the two most pirated series. And I'm not sure who actually said this, but I think it was like one of the, you know, creators of one of those two series. And
I mentioned the Game of Thrones things earlier, how it was apparently the most pirated show. Breaking Bad was the other one. And then I did actually see something with the like creators of Game of Thrones, and they, well, and whatever they said about that, but I think he kind of said, I think that they sort of understand why it's pirated, but they would want people to buy it, really, or whatever they said, you know, but, yeah.
Right, and the quote I saw was one of them said, hey, having the most pirated series was even better than having an Emmy.
I don't think I saw that, but they, but it's kind of like, it kind of means that you, if it's the most pirated, it means the show is really popular, but that's the only thing with that, really.
Right.
So having it seen as popular can be good. And actually, because of some of these pirates, of course, some people might then go and start watching the show in a bought way, you know, they might have, and they get more money that way. And that same argument could apply to music, when they always go, oh, no, the music, we're losing all this money, blah, blah, blah. But if people can try the music first or be told that this is good and that is good, then some people are going to buy it as a result as well. So,
Right. I can see that. Or if, you know, I'd be inclined, because I really like Breaking Bad, to say, hey, if Vince Gilligan comes out with something else, you know, he has a track record of being popular with me, I'd be willing to, you know, try out another one of his series.
All right, I'm a member of a private tracker, and let me throw you some statistics for Game of Thrones. There's 130-ish torrents here, and there've been 70,000 snatches of those torrents in the seasons of Game of Thrones.
Yeah, apparently, this was actually according to. It was all a Click episode. Yeah, the guy who was going on about Game of Thrones was on BBC Click, that's right. There's an episode about piracy, and what they were basically saying as well on there is how 75% of the torrent traffic is all this pirate, you know, stuff, this pirated TV show stuff. But 75% is piracy of all the torrent traffic in the world, apparently, according to this show. But then they also mentioned how, I think they did mention how actually you can use torrents to move around big data and so on. But that's right. No. They had a guy who started BitTorrent on. They interviewed him. That's what happened, yeah. And he was trying to say how he wanted to make his reputation a bit better when it came to torrents, because it's seen as being this big thing for piracy, and how 75% of it is used for piracy and all that kind of thing. But then how you can also move perfectly legal data using torrents as well, big files and so on. But yeah, that was quite interesting.
Oh, be right back, Al.
What was that?
I think Cobra 2 said he would be right back. Yeah, you know, that makes me think of Alfred Noble when he invented dynamite. And I guess... he saw his obituary, because I guess someone thought he died, and he didn't like his obituary, and you know, because I guess he thought that most people would remember him for creating a weapon of war, and so then he wanted to be remembered for something else, and I guess he started the peace prizes. So you just can't, you know. If you create something, you can't really control how it's going to be used for good or bad.
Well, it depends on what it is, but yeah, sure, in general, like, you can't really. And if you make the gun, you can't really control how it's done. If you mention the car, you can't really control how that's going to be used, and so it goes on. But
I guess when you talk about guns, if it is being used for good or bad, it depends on, you know, if you're looking at the barrel or you're holding the handpiece.
If you invent mumble, you can't They didn't control that we were going to be doing this for many, many hours.
I'm sure they had an idea.
Well, 3 hours and a bit, and it'll be the second day.
Yeah, if it wasn't for torrents and Usenet, I'd never get my anime.
I haven't used Usenet in years.
I don't think I've ever stopped.
So are there, like, apps to use Usenet, like modern apps?
I think there's a couple modern ones, but I don't use them.
Yeah, I'm just surprised to hear that they're still around.
Well, it's perfectly legal. There's nothing wrong with it.
Oh, no, not that it's illegal or anything. I just thought that, you know, people would use, like, IRC or, you know, something else besides Usenet.
IRC is too slow.
So what would you think would be, like, one of the most popular channels on Usenet today?
Alt-binaries TV shows or alt-binaries TV. Pretty much anything that spits out a TV show, a movie. Or wait, Boneless was pretty big, but that was just everything.
So what is Boneless?
Alt-binaries Boneless.
Homeless?
Boneless, like no bones in your body.
Oh, okay.
It'd be pretty cool if we could get podcasts up here. That would be a nice way to reduce load on ISPs and reduce load sharing those around. Actually, back in New Brunswick, my ISP is my main Usenet provider. I didn't actually have to start paying for it until recently.
So how are internet access speeds in Canada?
In New Brunswick, I have fiber to the house, and it's like 80... No, it's up higher now. It's like 100 and something megabits down and 80 megabits up.
Okay, I don't care how cold it is up there. I want to move now, right away.
And I pay around $150 a month for that. But that includes the phone, no TV.
Okay. I can see that. That doesn't seem bad.
Oh, no. For that speed, that's not outrageous at all. And there's no cap, unlike the rest of Canada.
Sounds wonderful.
But my power there has been out since the 23rd, so I'm kind of starved for content at the moment.
Because of an ice storm?
Massive ice storm. It's not supposed to be back on until the 4th. Actually, my wife can't even get to the house right now because there's still a tree blocking the road.
That's terrible.
Yeah, they got propane heaters in the basement, and they have to carry the propane tanks about half a mile.
So when they have, like, massive storms like that, do they allow people to use, like, alternative transportation modes, like, say, snowmobiles?
I don't know. It's usually a lot of people have snowmobiles and stuff, and they drive them on the roads and anyway. It's not exactly legal, and you really damage your treads if you're driving on pavement. But people do it all the time anyways.
Yeah, it just seems like that would be, you know, a really nice alternative of, you know, a means of transportation rather than getting stuck in a snowdrift.
Well, it definitely wouldn't be okay in the bigger cities, but like where my house is, it probably wouldn't be frowned upon as bad. But the RCMPs out where I live are just massive dicks.
Well, I'm going for a break. I'll pull you back in a bit there.
Take care.
Are you two going to, like, I don't know, chat for ages?
Ah, it's verbal. Verbal's very verbal.
Finally.
Because if it goes on for I don't think I'm doing it that long away, I don't think, but if it was to go on for another, like, I think it's, oh, hang on, about nearly 15 hours, it would be like the whole of New Year's Day, and people were talking about it earlier, but I don't think people are going to go that on that long, but who knows? We'll see. We'll find out, I guess. We need like different people doing that as well, otherwise it doesn't work.
Yeah, it would be interesting to see the stats on that, because I wonder how many people who couldn't really make it would listen to it and how many hours they would listen to. I mean, it's one thing to download something, then, you know, another to actually listen to it.
Yeah, totally. That's another thing if you actually listen to enough of it.
Well, I'm trying to stock up on podcasts and stuff that I haven't listened to because I'm about to be working very long days, probably by myself.
You know, one thing I've noticed where a podcast really helps me out is when I'm driving. It helps cut down on my road rage. Not that I'm really, you know, I have to really deal with that. But, I mean, if I'm stuck in traffic, I don't really mind if I have something nice to listen to. But, you know, if I'm just sitting there, it seems like the time just goes, just drags by if I don't have anything to listen to.
If I'm in traffic, I have to be playing something very loud to counteract my my rage. I have extremely bad road rage.
It's funny. Sometimes when I'm in traffic and it starts moving, I'm like, oh man, I was just getting into this. And it's like, it's the opposite. You want to have some time to listen to it. Especially like if you reach your destination, you know, you're like, oh my God, I just want to finish this.
Oh man, my favorite thing to do on a long road trip is to throw on some old Lotta Linux Lynx shows. That's great.
Yeah, I was sad to see Dave Yates disappear from the airwaves.
Well, he's still around every once in a while. I still got his cell phone number.
Yeah, I've got his home number. I should call him, actually.
I give him a buzz every once in a while. He's usually really busy now. I usually have the best luck just sending him a text. But man, I really miss him. I'd like to just grab him, do like a 15-minute interview and throw on HBR so other folks can hear him.
There you go. Yeah, that would be awesome. I also miss Chess Griffin a lot. He was really cool.
Oh, that's another show that I still have that I play repeats of. Have you ever been to any of the archive podcasts that from I can't remember the name of the website now.
Probably not. Not archive.org, right?
No, not archive.org. It's more specific for hacking and freaking.
Okay, probably not.
It's like textfiles.org or something like that.
No.
audio.textfiles.com.
Okay, I'll have to check that out.
Yeah, if you're ever content starved, they've got, I think it's most of the Radio Freak America shows, all Infonomicon, Talk with a Techie. They've got pretty much everything backed up. The guy that runs it is an archivist, and he just loves to archive stuff. There's a couple talks from DEF CON up there. You gotta listen to those. They're hilarious.
Ooh, wow. Tempting, really tempting.
There's a lot of media there. I'd say half of it's crap or based on like news and stuff, but there's a lot of stuff on there that's still relevant because the underlying system of Linux hasn't really changed that much.
Right. What was that address again?
I'll send you a link in the Mumble chat.
Got it. Thanks.
Yeah, bud. Enjoy. Note the console coloring when you get there.
Hey, that's what we should get together and do, is have everybody contribute to the big list of techie podcasts. I know Monster B had one around for a while, but...
Do you like listening to like talks from conferences and stuff? Like really hacker, techie-oriented talks?
Definitely.
All right, there's Chaos Communication Congress. I'll dig around and see if I can't pull up their FTP server or whatever it is they have. But they record all of their talks and put them online. I usually grab them in a torrent file or something.
Sounds nice. I can't believe it. It will not stop snowing. Just when you think, finally, it kind of peters out and then it just starts up again.
Look up the weather for a place called Conklin, Alberta. Conklin. That's the closest town to where I'm going to be working at.
I like the little tagline on their weather page. It's cold outside, still.
Yeah, yesterday it was like minus 30 degrees Celsius. Ah, I found it, Verbal.
I was just looking at the audio text files.
This is the web version of their Chaos Communication Congress FTP.
Got it.
Some of the more recent years also have pretty high quality video.
Sounds nice.
And as a note, not all of the talks are in English.
Oh, okay.
But usually the ones that aren't in English have German in the name, and they're usually prefixed with -D instead of -EN.
Okay, cool.
But you can also load this up into like LFTP and just grab the whole server.
That sounds like it would be like a massive download. I don't have those kind of speeds that you do.
Oh, I don't have them here. That's only in New Brunswick. Here I have maybe... Oh, they claim it's supposed to be 25 megabits down and 5 megabits up, but realistically it's more like 2... Not 2. It's more like maybe 15 megabits down and sometimes 2 megabits up.
Okay. Hey, didn't you win a machine at one of the Linux Fests a couple of years back?
Oh no, I won some DVDs.
Oh, I thought you won like a like an HP computer. Maybe I'm thinking of someone else.
Oh no, that wasn't me. I won some RiffTrax DVDs, but I was in the LPI test at the time.
Oh, okay.
I still have those, actually. I quickly ripped them and converted them. If you ever get interested in Usenet again, there's a provider that has relatively low speeds. I think it's like 1 megabit down, no SSL, and they but it's free, and they only have 10 days of retention. So you're kind of looking at, I want to grab a TV show that I missed last night. There you go.
Okay. I don't know. I think I think more so nowadays I'd be more interested in radio programs. But it's surprising. A lot of the radio programs are providing a lot of their content online now.
Are they including commercials in that?
No. No, they aren't. At least not the ones that I'm listening to. I think one of the the ones that I've been listening to is Radiolab. Out of New York City. It's an awesome podcast.
I think 2600 is still doing podcasts. Yes, they are.
Hey, Monster B's site is still up. I love it.
Fantastic. I have to run for about 10-ish minutes while I go do some laundry. You going to be around?
Yeah, I'll be around.
All right. I'll talk to you in a few, bud.
All right. Take care.
I'm back now. My laundry's not done. I don't reckon anyone's still on here, other than Verbal.
No, I'm here.
Oh, what's up, Soundy?
Eh, not too much.
I just had to step out, do some laundry.
Yeah, I'm about to go make a phone call, grab some food and that. Probably grab a shower, too.
Yeah, you probably need it after this long day.
All right, man. Take care.
Yeah, I'll probably be back.
I don't know how long I'll be around till I have to go to the grocery store, probably.
Well, there are still at least 3 recordings going, so I'm guessing that we're going to keep going for a while here.
Why not? Extra content, right? Play it in the middle of July. Bonus from the New Year's show. Well, I got this newsbeater thing going, and I can't for the life of me figure out how to make it rename the file slash folder names of stuff as it downloads it.
Can you set a default folder name per, like, say, podcast?
Well, I want it to pull down the name of the couldn't think of what I was trying to say. I want it to pull down the actual title of the in the RSS feed. I wanted to pull the title and then rename the folder the name of the title, and or skip the folder and just rename the enclosed file the name of the title.
Oh, okay.
See, the only way I used that before was getting an RSS feed of torrent files and then basically passing that off to a torrent tool to actually download the torrent.
Yeah, that's basically all I'm doing. Except I'm doing it with both torrents and NZB files at the same time.
I think TLKG had done some scripts to do that. I think that's who I got the stuff from before.
Yeah, I looked at his stuff. I had it from some past notes and some Google searches, but I don't see... His stuff was just for torrents. I don't really have a problem with the torrents. They do just fine. But when I'm pulling an NZB, when I pull it down, it just uses the name of the NZB file. And if the name of the file has spaces in it, it gets done into these lovely %20s into my file names and folder names.
Right, so you need something to pass it through and filter it. You'd probably just need to pass it through, like, set and in-place edit it. So you, like, change the spaces to underscores or something.
Yeah, I'm not exactly sure where to do that in NewsBeater.
I don't think you can do it in NewsBeater. You probably have to put a wrapper script around it or something. But since you're doing this on a router, you really don't have a shell or anything.
I've got Bash. Like, actual full 4.2 Bash.
Then it should be doable. I'd have to do some fiddling to figure it out myself, but... You should be able to basically do a search and replace on a string. Fair, not super easily, but should be doable. Actually, you know what would be easier? TR, the TR command, the translate, which is a separate binary you could actually possibly put on your router.
Yeah, I just look for it. It's not here. Actually, it is here. Well, I can get it to pull stuff down automatically. And dump all the files in. But then I need it to go back and rename the files to... because it's not just as simple as, you know, pull out all of the spaces and put a period in instead. Some of the file names are scrambled completely. Just 64-character text, alphanumeric.
Yeah, that's a little bit more difficult probably, and I'm not real familiar with this, so I don't know how to start it.
Yeah, if it wasn't for that crap, it would be easy.
See, I don't do a lot of this stuff.
Hey, that sounded like, hey, if it wasn't for the hard parts, it would be easy.
Yep, that's what it was.
The Windows guys can do it. Why can't I?
Oh, you can do it. You just have to figure out how.
Yeah, and Windows won't run on the router.
And you can probably actually do it better than the Windows guys can.
Oh, yeah. Currently, right now, I'm using... Ooh, nice. Less than 32 megs of RAM out of 256.
Yeah, do that with Windows.
In my Slackware box, I'm using less than 700 megs of RAM out of 12 gigs.
I was listening to a podcast, and they were talking about running, I think it was running Windows, running a Windows computer on a space station, and they said they were going to think about doing a test whether Windows or Linux was more efficient. And I'm like, really? Really? Do you even have to do that?
Well, if they were running Ubuntu, it would probably be about the same.
No, they were running Windows XP, and I says, well, maybe we'll look into this Linux. I'm not sure which version they were considering.
Well, there's some really fun things you can do with Linux that I haven't figured out how to do in Windows, or I just don't know where they are in Windows, like moving your var partition to RAM and maybe some other parts to RAM.
Cobra, did you hear the part of the conversation last night where we were talking about distros and we got into talking about like Gen 2 and Arch and that and being able to build your own kernel? And I don't remember who brought it up, but somebody said they had actually, they knew somebody who had actually built the kernel such that they got it with their full image and everything to scale down to the point where everything fit into L2 cache on the CPU.
Yeah, wasn't that a really, really specific build for a server?
Well, something like that, but I mean, you can do the same thing with your router. If you could actually, you know, build the kernel to the point where if it's in the L2 cache on the router, then you don't even have anything in the main kernel space running in the rest of your RAM.
Yeah, that's pretty ridiculous small.
But the router like that is the actual exact application that you would do something like that for.
Oh, absolutely. I bet you the speeds on that thing were just unrealistically fast.
That's unrealistic if it actually worked.
Yeah, when I build my kernel, I usually use a bunch of modules. I don't really build hardly anything in the kernel itself except for what has to be built in. Except for, like, with some specific hardware. Like, with the Apple TV, I build everything in. I actually need to test and see how long this battery's going to last on Slackware in this laptop. In Windows, it was given about 5 to 6 hours. Gen 2, I was getting pushing 10. It was nice.
You got Slackware on there now, you said?
I'm dual booting Slackware in Gen 2.
Slackware should do pretty good, because Pat Volkerding is actually fairly conservative in terms of his kernel builds and stuff.
Oh, come on, man. You gotta know me better than that by now. I don't run anybody else's kernel. I'm too much of a snipper. I cut out anything for any hardware that I don't have.
Well, that's probably pretty smart, too. Especially when you see some stuff like Red Hat suddenly jumping their kernel up to like 700 meg in memory. It's like, what?
Wow, that's crazy.
They were apparently loading all drivers, everything you ever wanted or could ever want. So everything loaded and it just got humongous.
It sounds like Windows.
No, it sounds like they loaded everything you never wanted.
Well, more crazy was that was on a server, too.
I bet you those guys were pissed. Even if you had the cheapest Linode box at the beginning of last year, that would have screwed you over because you only get 512 megs of RAM.
Well, this is actually on like bigger servers. You know, stuff's got like 8, 12, 20 gig, 24 gig.
I actually found out that my old roommate in college now works for Red Hat. I'm kind of jealous. So what percentage of the applications that you use would you say are running the terminal versus GUI?
This is crazy. It started snowing again here, and I don't know when it started snowing, but I may have to go sweep my driveway again.
You're not going to get any sympathy from me.
Yeah,
that was a joke, because I said sweep, not shovel, sweep.
Yeah, it just started snowing here again.
It's not supposed to snow again here till Friday. Oh, not bad either. 5-10 centimeters. It's what, 2 to 4 inches? Well, looks like I might have to get Bash Potter or something to do this crap with. Might actually work better just running out of cron. But I was kind of hoping for something that I could go SSH into the system and look at. Oh, wow. Mash Potter's awesome. Did exactly what I needed it to.
Isn't that kind of what I said from the beginning? I said Bash Potter, but Mash Potter is the expanded version of it.
Yeah, and I can just append the stuff that I need to my URL list that's here. I had to do a little bit of editing. I had to go in and tell it to look for NZB files.
Wow, it's still on.
Of course, man. Okay, well, it's getting a little slow, but it's still here.
Yeah, I just came back from some pancakes.
Ooh, I'm jealous.
Yeah, it was nice. Especially with Lingonberry jam on. It's a Swedish jam. I don't know if anyone knows it. If you've got IKEA over there, well, you should be able to get some over there, actually. But that's a very nice jam to put on pancakes. Lingon sylt in Swedish.
If Cobra has anything other than maple syrup, they'll probably kill him up there.
A little bit like cranberry jam, or cranberry sauce, I should say, but it's not really. It's got its own taste. It's very nice stuff.
Yeah, but Cobra is up in Canada, and that's maple syrup country.
My dad and my little brother went over. Well, they went to America quite recently, so they came back through Toronto, and he got some maple syrup there that he was going on about on Boxing Day, or the day after Christmas. But yeah, he got some in the airport. But yeah, this jam I was on about, or maple syrup, sure, or sugar, or lemon juice, or blueberries, it's all good on pancakes.
Yeah, I don't really like anything but syrup on my stuff.
Oh yeah, syrup. Yeah, and syrup, that's good as well, yeah. Who were you just chanting? They must have gone away as well. Oh, they must have gone away, yeah. Was it just Verbal and you chatting? Or?
Yeah, it was just me and Verbal. Sound Chaser was on here a minute ago.
Yeah, I'm still here.
Oh, I can tell you in about 5 seconds my mumble's going to crash.
Oh, that should be fun. Not.
That was funny. I watched it popping up like I'm watching the output in the terminal, and it just pops up with a bunch of hardware errors, and then poop, Mumble dies.
It dies, but it reconnected right away, didn't it?
Well, I watched it die, so I just executed Mumble again.
Ah, okay.
This computer's fast, man. The RAM still isn't full of cache. Oh, there's also a 24 gig SSD in this thing.
Is that Asus router that you were working on?
No, this is my actual laptop.
Oh, okay.
No, the router hasn't died. The router's freaking awesome.
Yeah, I figured after you got it back from being bricked, it would be pretty good.
Well, I bricked it again, did you hear?
Oh, I missed that. You bricked it again?
Yeah, I bricked it again, harder than the first time. I actually did have to go make a serial cable and TFTP to fix it. It was nasty. It was not fun.
Ouch.
But see, it's pretty cool.
I just don't get into playing that much with hardware. That's the thing.
Well, believe me, I wasn't intending to get into playing that much with it. I think I'm going to go run to the mini mart real quick and get some chips. I got a crunching craving.
I still have too much junk food sitting right around me at this point.
Chips, you mean? That's an interesting one, actually. Chips, you probably mean crisps, like most of Europe, but we say crisps, and then when we say chips, we mean French fries, or whatever you want to call them, so that's the UK, lies.
Yeah, we got fish and chips here, and that's about the only chips that are referred to as chips like you think of them. Everything else is potato chips.
Oh, sorry, they do say fish and chips, meaning the, like, what I'm saying. But otherwise, chips means crisps, there. Is that what you're saying?
Yep.
That's interesting. But I suppose, it wouldn't really work otherwise, because it would be, you'd be saying, like, fish and fries. It doesn't really work, does it? It's about the name for that one.
Actually, fish and fries doesn't sound too bad. A little alliteration.
Probably some good marketing go there. Fried fish and fries. Sounds like it'd come from my neck of the woods. But yeah, I am going to go run and get some chips. I'll be back in like 5-10 minutes. And I got to throw some laundry.
Yeah, sure. No problem.
So don't go nowhere.
Oh, no, it's all gonna stop in that 5-10 minutes when you're gone. And yeah. But no, we'll be chatting more seriously, I'm sure, still. Kind of need another European on, or somebody from another country, or doesn't really matter that much anyway. And it all goes silent.
Yeah, I'm looking at some other stuff here.
Have you got enough space for all the recordings? Or are you running out in home or something? That's what you were saying earlier, wasn't it?
I got plenty of space. So I still have like 200 gig of drive left, and that's before I actually expand it. I still have like another terabyte. I still have another terabyte or so of space available. Oh, we're actually up to using 9.2 gig now.
Nearly 10 gigabytes then. There'll be more if it carries on.
Yeah, well, the main part of the show, main 26 hours, is only like 6.8 gig, I think.
Yeah, that would be. That's a bit strange in a way, if you think about it. The so-called after party or after stuff is bigger than the actual thing. It is.
Well, 3.2 gig. Yeah, I guess if more people are in here chatting and stuff and talking about random things, it could be bigger.
Yeah,
but I don't know anybody who actually wants to try to edit a 1.7 gig mumble file, FLAC file.
Well, you're not, are you? Except for taking some white space, I thought anyway.
Well, but editing it, getting it into Audacity, 1.7 gig would be quite a heck of a load.
Haven't you got a file like that because of Merlin or something?
I've been doing the after stuff in 3-hour chunks, and that's turning out to be about 1.5 to 1.7 gig. In fact, I just accidentally left this one run over.
Yeah, I just saw that you restarted it, but that's okay.
Well, that's interesting. That last file, even though it was like 3.5 hours long, was only 800 meg.
Yeah, I don't know. It depends what's in it, doesn't it? Maybe it's to do with how the voices, how they sound, and how much. Oh, is it the tone? The, you know, the bars. The when you play it, they go up.
It's probably more about how consistent people were talking, how much they were talking, how many people were talking, all of that.
Yeah, it could be.
Well, I could see that because when I left yesterday, there were still quite a few people in the room, and they were all pretty much talking. I mean, there was like at least 10 people in.
Yeah. So other than this, what did you do for New Year's?
I did this. I was on here 26 hours.
Well, you had a few breaks and so on, I assume, so.
I took a couple of 15-minute nap breaks and half an hour for dinner.
You had a nap for 15 minutes? Did you say nap break for 15 minutes?
Yeah, like a doze break. Lay down on the bed with an alarm, and 15 minutes later I got up.
Yeah, that's not much for a nap, but yeah.
It was just enough to let my body charge down, you know, and pick back up.
Back now.
That was pretty quick.
The store is, like, literally on the other side of the complex here.
Ah.
I live right in the middle of Calgary. Well, not in the middle, but I live in a highly residential area with a lot of convenience stores, grocery stores, etc. I can... From my house, it's less than 3 kilometers to 3 different grocery stores.
You know, it was interesting. Yesterday, I spent some time with my wife's family, and we were in downtown Chicago. And all of a sudden, we saw this, like, you know, we were near to the lake, and we saw this little green light way over the lake. And, you know, we thought, what is out there over the lake? You know, part of it was frozen, so I thought it might be a snowmobile or something for some reason, although, you know, who would take that chance to go out there, you know, in a snowmobile? So one of the other guys was saying, no, it's a police department drone. So I have to find out more about that.
A drone? I would have figured it would have been like a buoy covered in snow.
No, it was moving. It was moving. Like I said, I thought it was coming near the shore, and I thought it was a snowmobile, because what else would be out there? But apparently the police department is using drones now to sort of patrol the beach. And the other strange thing was, we were like on the 30th floor of this building, but we did see like two people, you know, out on the ice, and you really can't tell what they're doing out there. But from what it looked like, one person was just wanting to walk into the lake, and the other person was trying to talk the other person out of it. You know, it was just strange.
Yeah, I'll be walking on a couple lakes up north. I actually have more information about what I'm doing, where I'm going, and who I'm working with this year than I did last year. I don't know what to do with myself. Last year, it was just a day-to-day thing of, yeah, get up, here, you're working. Oh, wait, nope, you're not working, you're traveling.
2013, last year, is that what you mean, yeah?
Yeah, last year.
Yeah, it was only, well, it was that year, just a day ago, but yeah.
I could probably say it better last season.
So what are the plans, I think you were talking about plans, well, kind of, for this year, so what are people's plans for this year? Or expectations and all that kind of thing, you know?
Buy Bitcoin, hold it, and hope it goes up.
Actually, my Bitcoin strategy is a little bit different than that.
It is one, actually, Bitcoin, yeah. If it's legal to do online gambling in America, which apparently it is, right?
It is not legal to gamble online in America.
Yeah, that's what I said. Apparently it's legal to... You say it's not, right?
Okay, it's not legal.
Right, yeah, okay. So, here's the question then. Would that also apply to Bitcoin? Because are these like gambling sites for Bitcoin out there as well? And so I'm thinking, would that apply to Bitcoin as well or not? Question mark.
Not unless Bitcoin becomes a fiat currency itself.
Yeah, that's kind of a gray area at this point since there's no legal status for Bitcoin in the US.
Yeah, but I think, although somewhere, I think somebody did, something happened and somebody bought something with Bitcoin and whatever, and then they were like, I think they actually treated it sort of like a real currency in the end because of whatever. But yeah, it's a bit of a strange one, isn't it? Because really, people are starting to use Bitcoin now as a, like a real currency or you know, in exchange for goods. And Amber Bundle has put in Bitcoin for quite a while now as well.
You know, there was personally, an article recently that they might open this, like, they might start using this kiosk, like, almost like an ATM for Bitcoin, and I think Chicago was supposed to be, like, one of the first ones in the Midwest.
Actually, why is online gambling banned in America anyway? Well, another question to go with this. Do you have any of this, like, you know, like TV gambling type games where you can ring up and you can take part in whatever and win some money possibly and all that?
Gambling in the US is banned, period. The only places that it's legal is on Indian reservations.
And Las Vegas. Yeah. And isn't there a place in Missouri too?
Wait, do you mean Las Vegas or what did you mean?
No, Indian reservations, like Native American reservations, it's legal.
Yeah, but obviously you've got casinos in Las Vegas and all that.
Right.
So. Yeah, like I said, the Indian reservations and Las Vegas. And I think there's also a place in Missouri that it's legal, too.
There are also casinos here that it's usually like riverboats, because I guess there's something that, you know, there's no one entity that controls the riverboats. And this was a funny article that I read somewhere that, like, in the middle of some, like, landlocked state, they put this, like, fake pond, basically, and a riverboat on that fake pond just to get around the gambling laws.
Yeah, and there is actually other cases. I mean, like, here, I'm in Nebraska, and there's actually... And in Iowa, there's actually a couple of casinos right on the border between Nebraska and Iowa, because there is some casinos allowed in Iowa for some reason.
But not in Nebraska, what do you mean?
Well, you get down into the corner of Nebraska where Omaha is. It's right along the border between Nebraska and Iowa. So there are actually some casinos in Iowa that are just less than a mile off the border from Nebraska.
But Nebraska is not allowed.
Right. In Nebraska, it's illegal to gamble, but Iowa has, they actually certify some casinos. Not a lot. They have only specific casinos that they will allow, but some of them actually exist right along the border with Nebraska.
Right, okay, yeah. But anyways, so you don't have this TV gambling or anything like that, or do you?
There are TV things, but they're not gambling. They're just games.
Well, I mean, I think I do mean probably games, really, where you can ring up and you can take part in some game and win some money, possibly, and it's, you know, I guess you probably have that as well.
But you're not betting, you're not actually gambling. You are just playing a game.
Right. And there's things like call-in radio shows where, like, if you give, like, the right answer, you'll get a prize, but that's not really considered gambling because the contestant...
You're not paying any money.
Right, the contestant has really nothing to lose, you know.
Oh, we used to have a great TV show over here. I think we might have an American version, actually. I'm not sure, though. But called Who Wants to Be a Millionaire? Where people would go on and they would answer certain questions and have an audience and all that. And you win money or you start to lose money if you get the answer wrong and you've got your phone a friend and 50-50.
We have that
50-50
here, too. We have that here, too.
I think we had it first.
Actually, I think it started here and then it was syndicated out.
You don't have to pay any money to be a participant, therefore it's not gambling.
Well, I get you. But I think they stopped making that show here as well. But it was good. It went on quite a few years. Actually, they repeat it on the game show channels and stuff. And I was watching one the other night, whenever it was now. And it used to be really good. It used to be like the thing to always watch on a Saturday, or one of them. And but I don't think it's made anymore.
The other thing you have here is the lottery, which is, I guess, a form of gambling.
Oh yeah, we've got the lottery here, and I think, and in other countries they've got things like that as well, Sweden, etc. But yeah, that's sort of, I guess that can be, it's either a game or gambling or whatever you want to say, but there's the lottery.
And it's just a tax on stupid people.
Well, some people apparently win, but it's not, most don't.
I've never lost. I've played 4 times in Georgia.
To be honest, I haven't even bought a lottery ticket. I've been able to buy one for, you know, quite a few years now. And actually made that about 10 years or 11 years or whatever. But I haven't actually bought a lottery ticket, but oh well.
I never bought a lottery ticket either. I was given one for my 18th birthday, and I won a free ticket off of that. And then I won $5. And then I won... I spent one of those dollars on another ticket, and I won another free ticket, and then another free ticket. I don't get really much excitement out of scratching tickets or picking numbers.
And here they you get scratch cards and all that here as well. For maybe on the airplanes, and they like say, oh, if you get this, if you have this scratch card, you can win something possibly, and the money goes to charity. They say and things like that as well, but I think most people lose. And I think for any of these things, even with like chocolate wrappers and things like that as well, I think again, you tend to lose on these things. You might win this and that, but I think most people lose, and it's simple as that.
Well, by definition, I mean, most people who play lose. You know, I'll take a risk whenever the prize allotment is like really, really high, like, you know, $10 million or something, or $100 million, but it's just for the fun of it. It's not like I expect to win.
Well, yeah.
I like to just do poker with some friends or some blackjack.
I wonder if anyone is actually on the live stream listening to us at the moment or not.
Probably not.
Well, there were some earlier, but I'm not sure about now.
Well, I show there's about 20 active connections to the streams, so whether or not anyone's actually listening to us, that's another question, but there are people connected to the stream still.
I'd minus about 8 of those connections as mirrors.
What, so 8 of them are yours, is that what you're saying?
No, this is all of them together, so let me do a quick count. So there's 19 total connections going across all of the streaming servers.
Right, okay. But yeah, we might be in somebody's kitchen or something, broadcasting out. whilst they're doing other things, or living room, or yeah.
I'm trying to fold clothes and eat chips, and it's just making a greasy mess.
Yeah, not exactly a good combination there.
Good thing they're not my clothes.
I'm glad you're not folding my clothes, because I wouldn't want to be wearing greasy, chippy clothes.
Yeah, all of my woes could have been solved if I just used mash potter in the first place.
And how many hours ago did we suggest that?
I don't know, I was just looking for something different. I already use it.
Maybe for the next one we should the whole week. Now people coming in randomly for the whole week. I'm joking here.
Hey,
go ahead.
Sorry. So for the ACF, Accessible Computing Foundation, what is their stated goal in terms of dollars?
100,000.
Is that the Aqua thing, or?
Hey, maybe they should start something like the Humble ACF Bundle.
Well, he's got all sorts of awards for making donations.
Well, I did my part. I donated mine, so we'll see what happens.
Yeah, I'll please donate to that as well. Because Aqua is... You are on about the Aqua thing, aren't you?
Yes.
Yeah, I thought so. Yeah, I'll probably donate something to that as well. As for if the campaign actually happens or not, well, that's, you know, that depends if they get them out with Indiegogo.
Well, I'm guessing since yesterday, he's only had about maybe, well, 7 donations that show up on his site, but 2 that I know that aren't showing up, so he probably had about 10 donations between New Year's Eve and today.
Yeah. Thing is, really, a lot of people should donate to that because I mean, you know, something might happen and people lose eyesight and so on as well. So, you know,
well, I just hope as the show actually goes out and more people hear it, then maybe he'll actually get more donations.
Yeah,
they need to set a longer timeline.
Oh, he has. He's had over a month on this, but he just hasn't been getting anywhere with it. But he also chose a bad time of year, you know, coming right around Christmas and everything.
Yeah, I thought about that too. I think if it were me, I'd probably maybe do it around in April sometime.
Why is around Christmas a bad time of year? That's when usually people who see charity things are more likely to give.
That's after they go ahead and buy all their Christmas presents and take care of any expenses they have for Christmas, buy all their Christmas food, and do everything else they can first.
Yeah, I was thinking something like that as well.
Yeah, with those $60 turkeys.
They'll spend the money on Christmas, so San Chase's point.
Yeah, I mean, you just said a $50 turkey. I've gone to the grocery store, and just for me alone, I've easily dumped several hundred dollars on groceries around the holidays just because the prices do go up and stuff, and you want to actually buy some more in case you're stuck at home with any storms or anything.
Or a lot of times, you have to buy more because you have friends and family coming over.
Well, that adds more to it. I was saying even without that.
Yeah, we save a lot of money. We don't buy any meat here, so that cuts out a huge amount of expense.
Two things then. You said storms, and I'm thinking, well, we don't really get that many storms in the UK, because there was something recently that was supposed to be major that wasn't that major, and another storm, but nothing. There's not really any proper tornadoes as such and things like that. And and Cobra was saying something about not eating meat. I mean, buying meat. Is that because you've got your own animals?
No, I don't have my own animals. I usually let somebody else buy it.
All right.
It's like, if you want meat, that's fine. I'm not paying for it, but I'll cook it for you. Yeah, and my roommate is like full-on hardcore vegan diet.
So how does that work out with you letting other people buy meat?
It works out pretty well. A lot of people like chicken and steak.
Yeah, but if you're vegan, then you don't have chicken or steak.
I'm not vegan. I'm an omnivore. I'm on the seafood menu. I see food and I eat it.
No, your roommate, you said, was.
Yeah.
So they won't eat fish either in that case as well, but...
I missed what you said.
I said if somebody's vegan, they're not going to eat... They're not going to eat meat, and I also then said they're not going to eat fish as well. Because you said your roommate was vegan, didn't you?
Right, but by seafood diet, I meant I'll eat anything.
Okay, right.
Seafood, eat food. S-E-E, not S-E-A.
Yeah, seafood. But that means... Anyway, to me that would mean you would eat fish and stuff like that from the sea. But,
no, that's exactly what he's saying. He's not the case. He's saying sea as in vision, as in S-E-E. He sees food, he eats food.
Okay, right, I understand now, yeah.
It's probably my accent throwing off my syllables. I have a hard time with enunciating everything. But you sound confused by what I've described, so am I not explaining something correct?
No, it's fine. No, this all makes sense now. But you're basically saying you'll eat anything, and but Sam Chaser was saying, but your friend was vegan, so how does that fit him to get somebody else buy meat? That was the other thing as well.
Oh, well, we have people over, and, like, I'm pretty good at cooking, so I do most of the cooking. Actually, I do all the cooking, except for, like, spaghetti and pastas. But, like, anything on the grill I cook. So, like, if we have folks over and somebody wants hamburgers, they just go pick up some ground beef from the store or something, bring it over, and I fix it, prepare it, grill it up. Or, like, if they want chicken, I fix it and prepare it, grill it up, or like turkey dinner. We provide all the veggies, and if somebody wants a turkey with it, well, they bring it over and I fix it, and that's how that works.
Right, okay.
I do all the cooking, they just provide the substance to cook.
Although in America, apparently, with, I think it's pigs and maybe cows as well, two things actually. For one of them, they apparently kind of pump them up with drugs to make them grow quicker, apparently. And then the thing about these farms or whatever, where they're not really a farm, they're more like a factory, and they're like kind of stuck in cages and they're not really getting out much. I mean, like I'm saying apparently here, I'm not sure how true all this stuff is, but you might know something.
I actually live in Canada, but back home in Georgia, my family does not eat meat from a grocery store or anything like that. Everything we eat is fresh and usually grown ourselves. So grow our own chickens, cows, and we shoot our own deer, hogs, and whatever else.
Well, because of what I've had, or you're not sure where the meat came from, or was it another reason?
Because it tastes better. Like, if you have a hamburger, like, you go to the grocery store, and you get some medium ground beef, or whatever the fattiest ground beef that you can get. You make a hamburger, cook it on the grill. You go to somebody who has a cow that's been grass and corn-fed up to the... Well, actually, grass and grain-fed is better than corn-fed. But that's just my personal taste. So you get one that's grass and grain fed up to the day it dies. And then you have that, adding no seasoning to them. The homemade cow, the one that was grass and grain, will be better than the supermarket cow, which is 2 weeks of nothing but corn.
Yeah, I guess.
The corn's supposed to sweeten the meat up, but to me, it just washes out a lot of good flavor. Then it also kills, like, the nutritional value of the cow. Like, as far as the nutrients in the meat, there's not as many to me. And they just do it to fatten them up so that the cow is heavier than heavier and fattier than one that's grass and grain. And this process is approved and mandated by the FDA for anybody that sells meat wholesale. And meat, I'm referring to cows specifically. I don't know about all the pigs and everything. Usually we just go hunting for them.
here the supermarkets have pretty much taken over and all this kind of stuff as well. I mean, there are some butchers still around, but it's mainly just people going to supermarket for meat and everything else now, in general. Well, and a few local shops with this and that as well, but yeah.
There's a couple of little shops around here that are just like farmers markets, and they just have fresh produce in them pretty much year-round.
Well, yeah, there can be a market as well in the towns and stuff, but it's kind of like this. The supermarkets in general have kind of taken over a lot of stuff. Not many people go into the butchers or the groceries to get their own fruit from there or vegetables, but that's how it is really around here anyway.
Yeah, everybody prefers one-stop shop instead of having to stop by the butcher and the bakery and the grocer.
Yeah, exactly.
It's convenience, man. It's bad. Raise your kids. Tell them that convenience is evil. You need to work at stuff if you want it to be the best that it can be.
And then they have bakeries inside the supermarkets. They have their own bakeries and stuff and that now as well. So it's just all one-stop, really.
All right, now, as far as the bakery and the supermarket, there's one of these grocery stores down the road from us, and they have the best bakery as far as, like, bagels. They do all their home, they do their own bagels and everything right in the store. They have awesome bread. They do a veggie bread, and it is just out of this world. I've never had anything like it.
Oh, a veggie bread, like, what was that, like, what's the difference between that and some normal bread or whatever?
No egg, no milk, no dairy.
But you're saying it tastes nicer than normal bread?
Absolutely. Easily. It is. It's much better than regular bread. They do three different kinds. They do one that's green peppers and oats. And I have like oats sprinkled on the top. And then they do one that's they roast their red peppers, and it's heavy with a bunch of herbs like oregano and cilantro and stuff like that. That one's real good. And then their other one's just kind of like a whole wheat, crappy oatmeal tasting thing.
Yeah, yeah. Well, yeah, in general, homemade bread is probably nicer than a lot of the sport bread. Well, as long as it's done, made properly and stuff, but...
It's also cheaper than buying the most of the whole grain breads that are sent from the major bakeries. On average, a loaf of bread around here, a good loaf of bread, costs in between $3 and $4.50, and you can get this stuff for $2.50.
Canadian dollars, I assume you mean.
Yeah, Canadian, which is almost the same as US.
I'm from England, but okay, they get to Florida and stuff. I've been to Florida, but and an airport in North Carolina, but yeah, it's about as far as it's gone. So far to go to USA. But what I was going to say is, obviously being in America or USA and Canada, when you like cross over to America, or maybe all the other way around, possibly even. Do you notice a lot of difference, like between how the countries are, or is it just pretty much the same, really? Or is it, because I mean, with some states there can be quite a few differences as well, apparently. So I'm thinking, if you go to America or Canada, or you're in Canada, do you notice much difference, or is it just like sort of like the same? It's like if I go to the mainland of Europe, I mean, you know, it's the developed world, there'll be different languages, but, and you get nature and all that, but in general, things can be quite similar too. You have your boats, you have your cars, you have your this, you have your that. I mean, there's not, what kind of difference do you notice between the two? That's what I mean, if you get what I mean.
It depends on which province you cross over into. If you're crossing over into New Brunswick or Quebec, immediately you'll notice in New Brunswick that all the road signs and everything are in French and English. And then if you go into Quebec, you'll immediately notice that there's no fucking English anywhere.
Oh, yeah, yeah. I mean, actually, that's a good one as well. What reminds me of, like, here, if you go to Wales, which is actually quite near me, when you cross over to Wales, there's both signs are in Welsh and English. And then you come back to England and only in English. And I think, I'm not sure about Scotland, I haven't been there for a long time, but I think they're only in English there as well. But the Scots, I think they're just pretty much just speak English now, and they have their own languages, but they don't really speak them that much, I think, now. Whereas in Wales, for some people, it's very important that they learn Welsh, and they know Welsh, and I think the schools have to teach Welsh, and that's the difference there as well.
Yeah, there's a few differences. Nothing really smacks into you as soon as you cross the border, other than like the road signs. When you go into a grocery store, there's a huge difference there. The prices on everything in Canada are more expensive. And then there's that lovely sales tax. In the eastern provinces, it's significantly higher than it is out here in Alberta. I think New Brunswick is at 13%, Nova Scotia's at 14%, and Newfoundland's at 15%. I think PEI's at 13% as well, 13 or 15, I can't remember. And then, like, compared with Alberta, which is 5.
If someone's driving a car from England to, say, France or anywhere else, really, on the mainland, go across on a boat or whatever, I mean, I think one of the first differences for a start would be, of course, that you drive on the right rather than the left, and also that it's done in kilometers per hour, not miles per hour, like the UK and America.
Oh, yeah. I was wondering why the speed limits were 120.
Yeah, I know. It seems a bit high, doesn't it? But yeah, kilometers per hour, so not, it's not as high. Well, it'll be about the same, but it's just a bigger number, isn't it?
I didn't get pulled over, but after I was driving for a little while, I was like, man, driving 100 is really fast. I don't feel safe doing this.
are you joking, or did you actually do this?
I actually did that.
Well, on the motorway?
Well, it's a 2-lane highway, the road I was on.
And you did 100 on the... Yeah.
I think I topped out around 110.
Where was that?
That was in New Brunswick, coming up the number one.
Wait, New Brunswick? I think in Europe, but you said... Was it...
Oh, no.
New Brunswick, where's that? Hang on, New Brunswick, where's...
East Canada, bud.
Oh, they've got kilometres there as well, is that what you're saying?
Yeah, all of Canada is SI units, metres, kilometres, kilos, Celsius.
Oh, okay, right. I didn't realize. I didn't know that. But yeah, there you go. That would be the same difference that I was talking about as well when it came to the mainland of Europe.
Yeah, and I knew the speed limit was 110K, but I drove 110 miles just because I could.
Okay, yeah. Although if you go to Sweden, by law, or as far as I know, it's still by law anyway. You have to actually have the lights on in the car, even in the day when you're driving along. So, and I remember going there with my family and my mum and stuff, and she'd be like, did I turn the lights on in the past and stuff like that? But I think this law still applies today. And so you have to drive with your lights on in the daylight, even if it's a really sunny day or it's really bright and all the rest of it, you have to drive with the lights on in the car. And I think maybe now actually some of the Swedish cars will automatically put the lights on.
Sell a car in Canada that doesn't do that since 2008 or 2009.
Oh, right. That's interesting. I didn't know that either. But in the UK, on the other hand, you can drive in the day without lights on. That's fine.
So what's your choice of preference? Do you drive with your lights on all the time, even if you have to manually turn them on, or do you leave them off?
Actually, I don't really drive, to be honest, but I've had lessons before, etc. But I assume for safety, in a way, the Swedish people and I suppose the Canadians have it right, it would probably make sense to have the lights on in the day because you might see the car a bit better. But on the other hand, it probably won't matter that much in general unless it's dark enough, but people aren't going to put lights on anyway, probably.
Yeah, see, back where I come from, if a car was driving down the road with his lights on, it meant that he was having trouble or having an emergency. So when all the people from started moving down south from up north into my neck of the woods and Atlanta started spreading out to where I lived, or traffic from Atlanta started spreading out to where I lived, people started driving around with their lights on all the time, and I thought people were having all sorts of emergencies all the time.
Well, that's the flashing lights, but yeah.
No, it's not flashing lights. Like, if I was having car trouble or something, and I was driving down the road, to my house, and one of my neighbors saw me in my car with my lights on in the middle of the day, he would stop, turn around, follow me home, and be like, "Hey, is everything okay? Are you good?"
Right. Yeah.
It was just like an unspoken way to say, "Hey, I'm having car trouble," or "I'm having trouble," or "Get the hell out of my way, I'm in a hurry."
And then a good one, actually, you know, we've got the whole idea that, like, oh, we're going to get electric cars one day, or they're going to be a mainstream, possibly, and all those cars that I think they'd basically use, like, recycled food waste or whatever it was. What are they called? Hydro cars? Yeah, there's all these different, like, car types that are supposed to be more environmentally friendly. But a good one with electric car, of course, is that... now, apparently, electric car is... Well, yeah, I mean, I've seen them on TV, this BBC Click and stuff like that. Well, yeah, on there, really. I remember they were going on about how it was... how the electric car is actually very, very quiet, so you wouldn't really know that an electric car is coming along down the road unless it made a noise. So there was the whole thing about, like, what noise should the electric car make? And so, yeah, there's that as well. As for if they go mainstream or not, and we get the electric cars and things like that, possibly in the next few years. As for the whole futuristic flying car thing and all that, I don't think that's coming any time soon, if at all, really.
Well, you know, the flux capacitor and fusion reactors are just around the corner, man.
Yeah, we've got space travel, and we're gonna move to Mars, and right. Well, we'll see. But I suppose if the world keeps on getting polluted like it is at the moment, you know, if that keeps on happening and this whole global warming thing is true, for example, and which it apparently is, you know, then it's probably good to kind of research to see if we can move to another planet and live there.
Yeah, I'm not a real big fan of tree huggers. Tree huggers make my life miserable. Because they have a pretty big impact on the companies that I work for and what they decide to do.
Well, what type of companies is that?
I work for Big Oil.
Oh, I see. Right, yeah, yeah. So you're not, that makes sense. You're not so keen on these really environment people.
Not at all. And usually most of the stuff I hear in the media is just so wrong. It's not even funny.
Such as
there's massive pools of toxic waste that are left behind after a mining crew goes through.
Yeah, I don't know much about mining, but I think that one's probably not true.
Well, not mining, after a well drilling crew goes through. What happens when you drill a well is you use water to cool the bit as it's drilling. So as you're drilling down, a bunch of sludge comes up, and the sludge is mud, water, and a small mixture of oil as the bit bores through all the rock and dirt and crap that it has to get through to hit the actual... Ooh, excuse me, to hit the actual well. And then that water is captured, transported, and taken to... The water that they test it on site, and the water that doesn't have any oil is dumped in a retaining pool, and then anything that does have oil contaminants in it, and they can tell just right as they're drilling, as soon as 'cause it changes color and stuff, and the water that and mud and sludge that is contaminated gets stuck in barrels and cleaned up by guys on the ground. Like, actually, they go around and clean up the mud, and that's transported and taken care of. Usually, it's refined out because waste not, want not.
Okay. What about what other samples have you got then?
Other samples? Oh, shoot. How it's extremely detrimental to the environment to have all the heavy machinery and stuff going through on top of all the frozen bogs and whatnot. The piece of land that I'm working on this year was last drilled on 25 years ago. Like, we're going over the top of old well sites because for some reason all the wells have filled back up with oil, and we're looking for better spots to drill. Like, this stuff was bone dry 15 years ago.
Yeah, but you said, the media is saying that stuff was wrong. So,
they say that after the heavy machinery and everything goes through, it leaves massive scarring on the environment, and it's so hard to recover. And we won't. It looks pretty recovered to me.
What about it's not oil, but I mean, what about logging? When you can, people kind of cut down the rainforest and to make paper and make money and so on, or whatever reason. What are your opinions on that? Do you think it's like a bad thing that a rainforest keeps on getting cut down like that, or do you think it's okay, or?
I don't know. I'm not in the rainforest. I really don't have an opinion on that one. That's for those folks that are local to that part of the world to decide on. If cutting down the rainforest is destroying their homes and stuff, then it's probably not a good idea. But if it's not, what's the big deal?
Right. Okay. What about if there's an oil spill in the sea because of whatever, because the boat crashed in something, or whatever the reason. I mean, and then you get all these buzz all going all over the place and all that. What do you think about that?
There's always oil leaking into the sea all the time. It's just sometimes it's massive quantities. Like, the oil spill is just a larger than usual quantity of oil that is already there. The sea naturally takes care of itself. Are there any remnants of that oil spill that BP had a year or two ago?
That's the one I was kind of thinking of when I was asking that question. But yeah, that's one example. There's been others in the past as well.
Okay, what about the big, huge tanker back in 85 in Alaska, the Exxon tanker? Are there any remnants of that?
I don't really know about that one, but I guess not as such, if it's not really been talked about since then.
Oh, they talk about it a little every once in a while. It had a huge impact on the environment, evidently. So huge that they're still talking about it today, just like the BP oil spill. It did so much damage. Where's the damage?
Right, okay, yeah. That's why I was kind of... But so you think there isn't... You think that when they say there's a lot of damage or left from these oil spills, that it's not really true? Is that's what you're saying, isn't it?
The damage is minimal. Sure, a bunch of sea creatures lose their lives, but it's just like a tsunami hitting Thailand. A bunch of people are going to die. What's the difference in between a man-made disaster and a natural disaster?
Depends on the disaster, doesn't it? Or can do.
No, generally. What's the difference in between a man-made disaster and a natural disaster?
Well, both will make damage, if that's the answer. I think that's the answer you're trying to get.
They both cause massive amounts of damage. There's not really any difference other than people think that just because it's a man-made disaster that it was somehow preventable. The only way that it would have been preventable is to have never had the technology to create the disaster.
Yeah.
As we get more advanced, we're going to start creating more and more disasters because shit blows up. It really, really irks me when people are going on about how we need to control man-made disasters and how we shouldn't have things that do advanced technology because, oh, and then they keep on using their iPads.
Well, hang on, the iPad, do they want to control this and that and they still use the technology? Is that what you mean?
Yeah, they're whining, bitching, and complaining about the advanced technology that's destroying the world, and they're contributing to it by continuing to consume products of the technology.
Well, yeah, there's a lot of electronic waste. I think that's what you mean as well, when people get enough of their phone or their iPad or whatever it is, and they think, oh, we need a new one, when really the old device is working well enough still, and then it goes into landfill sites or whatever, and a lot of time it doesn't really get, you know, it doesn't get recycled or whatever, it doesn't go through the whole removing electronic waste properly thing as well, so it just goes in the landfill site or whatever.
The only, like, green activists that actually catch my attention are the hippies that have their own farms, and they're actually trying to dissociate themselves completely from the things that they don't think should exist. They're actually trying. Those folks got my respect.
What? So, some people will, or well, some people would basically choose nature and living somewhere, you know, a little hut or somewhere in the forest, let's say, without electricity, without water, without technology, without all that kind of stuff. You know, what do you think? Is that the kind of people you meant you would, like, think how respectful, or what did you mean?
Yeah, they're advocating against the use of, you know, the things that are destroying their world, or the things that they believe are destroying their world, and they're not using them, they're not partaking in them, and they're creating their own... they're building their own ecosystem, basically, an economy, just by being out there and doing their own thing.
Well, yeah, but giving up on tech and so on, but yeah.
And they're giving up things like advanced medical treatment and stuff like that as well. I mean, their mortality rates are a little bit higher.
If you had to go 6 months without computers and all that kind of TVs and all the rest of it, you know, do you think you would just go be like, oh, okay, I'll just do all this other stuff, or would it be like a problem to not have access to all this stuff, you know, for you? I mean,
for me, it'd drive me nuts. I would hate it. I like being able to communicate with other people. I like being able to read stuff on the internet, and I like to be able to play with computers.
Yeah, same here. It's just, a week without, you know, without internet access, and or a week or so, depending where you are and so on. I mean, yeah, it can be nice to have a break and get away from all that, switch off. But I think in general, a lot of people are very connected to their computer or the internet in particular, you know, and TV and all the rest of it, that it's really difficult to like get away from that for long enough unless you're going somewhere and doing something completely different or whatever, you know.
My job is extremely remote. The only place I have internet is sometimes in camp, and sometimes I have cell service, but that's really spotty, and it's usually extremely crappy satellite internet that's been repeated 600 times, so you're only getting maybe a tiny fraction of the original bandwidth of the connection. And during the day, when I'm not in camp, I have no service. I don't get text messages. I don't get phone calls. I don't get emails. It's completely silent as far as communication, other than a radio.
What did you mean repeated? The internet got repeated?
The way they set it up in the camp is Wi-Fi routers to repeat the signal. Every time you repeat the signal, you lose 50% of the bandwidth.
Repeat, as in use it again? Is that what you mean?
Well, it's just like using a Wi-Fi repeater, a signal booster.
Oh, right, okay, yeah. Well, anyway, but, yeah, but you said you're, like, cut off from this and that, but that's a little bit different because then you're obviously working and doing all this, like, other stuff. But by choice, if you could, like, you know, you go on holiday somewhere and you're going to be disconnected for a long time, would that be an issue or wouldn't it be? Or for 6 months, I think that your answer was a yes, but for just a week or two, would it really matter? If you, you know, would it be an issue or wouldn't it matter?
Depends on where I'm going. If I'm going to visit my family, yeah, it would be an issue. If I'm going to the beach or the mountains somewhere, no, it wouldn't be an issue.
Family, so you can stay in touch with other people as well, or what do you mean?
Family, so I can go hide in a corner and escape my family.
Right, okay.
I'm extremely antisocial.
If you're in a social room.
Oh, Chris, the USA is back.
Do you like my name?
And you're really quiet again.
Sorry, really do you quiet. Like my name? Chris, it's almost like Chris Sousa.
Yeah, I know you've done like Chris USA, but with the capital S at the end of Chris as well. But yeah, I suppose you've got to put something in. I mean, Chris has probably taken us on this thing, or possibly, and it's not really the most exciting thing to put, is it? So.
I get disconnected just now. Sorry.
I don't know, I was just saying something about Chris, USA, how he had to do something, and Chris has probably taken on this network, or possibly, and it's not really the most exciting thing to put, is it? So that works, Chris, USA, or Cree, S-U-S-A, even.
I was trying to copy Sousa. Sousa?
I see, right, yeah, Open Sous, or Sousa, whatever it's called.
Except yeah, that makes with an sense. E instead of an A.
I get it now. Did you use that distribution, or do you just like it? Or
actually, right now I'm using Windows because Linux doesn't support my game that I play. But I have worked on learning Arch.
What game?
The Old Republic, the MMO.
Is that the Star Wars one?
Yep.
But you use OpenSUSE, but have you used that all, or are you just trying to get into Arch now?
I just use virtual machines, but I've actually had Fedora 17, Fedora 18, and Fedora 20 on my computer as my main operating system for about 2 months each at a time.
So you use Windows as your main operating system normally, is that what we're saying?
Yeah, and then I use VirtualBox to do my Linux stuff.
Alright, you've got it the other way around, bud. You should be using Linux as your main machine and VirtualBox to do the Windows stuff.
I actually tried that, and it runs a lot crappier through a virtual machine.
You probably need to get a really beefy, accelerated NVIDIA card.
I have a 1 GB NVIDIA card. Actually, it's PNY, but
kind of agree with Cobra there. It's sort of doing it the other way around, but on the other hand, whatever worked for you, I guess. Although we had a little discussion earlier about trying out distributions in VirtualBox and like if that was any good or not, if you should do it that way, and I mentioned how actually for testing that can be done as well, like quality assurance for distros, but you have to do it on real hardware as well. But and I think a virtual machine actually you can get quite a close experience to the physical install, like what you would have had, but it can depend on your hardware to some extent, like how much RAM you have possibly, so how quick the virtual machine loads up and things like that.
I have 6 GB of RAM. However, I have a dual core processor and my RAM's only 400 MHz RAM.
Yeah, I mean, but yeah, virtual machines kind of give you a feel of the operating system, but to have a proper idea, a 1% idea what it really is like, you kind of need to install on a physical machine. But depending on the computer and what somebody's doing with it and things like that, I mean, running on a virtual machine and then having it on the computer for real could not really make much difference, I guess. depending on how people are using it and what's being used for and the hardware of the computer, if you get what I mean.
So here's a question I have. If I set up just the Linux kernel with KVM and all that stuff installed so I can set up virtual machines, well, first of all, is that possible to set it up just so you have KVM and so you can set up virtual machines? And then I don't go from there and install Windows on top of that.
I don't really use KVM. I use VirtualBox, and I've used VMware Player before and Server. But
it's pretty much the same.
But yeah, it'll be similar. And I think you can pretty much just do a virtualization computer like you're saying with KVM. But I don't use KVM, like I said.
Where you're getting down to the hardware level of things like that, you'd probably be looking more towards XEM instead of KVM.
Zen?
Yeah, bud.
Oh, Zen.
But I'm not sure Zen has support for Windows.
No, KVM's got the Windows support, and honestly, KVM is a ton better than Zen overall. You just need to make sure you get it set up and tweak it to make it work better.
But it's possible just to have the Linux kernel and boot to VMs from that?
Absolutely. Absolutely. We do where I work. We actually do KVM servers where everything is. It's almost like having a thin client of the hypervisor OS, and everything's running in KVM virtuals.
Yeah. So using Windows as a host in this case, you might need it for KVM or whatever, but you could basically do your virtualization computer with all these different virtual machines, including of Windows, like you're asking, as far as I know.
There was an OS, I can't remember if it was on HPR or if it was on TWAT, and it was called Bare Metal, and it was specifically for running multiple operating systems.
Also, with virtual machines, of course, when it comes to security, two things here, actually. One, you could have it, I'm thinking VirtualBox here, so obviously KVM is going to be a bit different, and VMware has a VMDK file instead of as its hard disk and then the whatever configuration file, from what I remember. But what I'm thinking here is, when it comes to security, of course, I'll use Windows in the sample because people normally think viruses, Windows, spyware, and all the rest of it. So, of course, if you get a virtual machine of Windows in this case infected with a virus, then it's obviously infected and all that. But you could instead of having to do the whole reinstall thing, like if you have it on a physical computer, then you can have your little antivirus or you reinstall, and then it should all be gone and all the malware properly. But what I'm thinking, what I'm going to say is when you have a virtual machine, you get kind of security advantages in a way, or depending on how you use it and what you do, because what you can do is you can then copy the clean installer Windows or whatever it is, and then just start over like that. Or you can, of course, use a snapshot in virtualization software and just go back to that. So that's like a good advantage of virtual machines when it comes to right. What I just said as well.
What I would do, just in case, is I would set it up to so that I would clone, after I have everything that I want installed, I would clone it.
You clone it.
In case I get a virus, just delete that and reopen the clone.
Well, yeah, but that's more for a physical install, I think, when you clone the disk or the partition rather than the virtual machine. But same kind of idea, really. With my netbook, before I put my Gear 2 on it, in this case, actually, and then later my Gear 3 anyway, before I put Linux on my netbook, actually technically it came with Linux, but I had to enable that the instant on iOS. But anyway, somebody basically said to me, you should probably back up your hard disk just in case, whatever. And so I used one of those, I used, I think it was CloneZilla, and I backed up the drive and all that and ended up with whatever files, and I'm a bit like thinking like, how would I actually restore from this backup I made? I haven't really done that kind of stuff before, so I didn't really understand that. But what was I going to say? Well, maybe that was the thing I was going to say. But yeah, you can restore from your backups, or I think I've lost the point I was going to make. I can't think properly.
I think one of the problems though is the game itself lags because of their servers.
Say so that
playing
again?
It through virtual, their game server lags.
Wait,
so
what?
Playing it through virtual
game server for what?
Is going to lag more.
Well, you said game server, didn't you?
Yeah, their game server, the Old Republic.
Yeah, games is pretty lacking on Windows, Linux. Windows has kind of gotten them beat on that.
Oh, we had this... Actually, we had a bit of a discussion about games whenever it was now earlier. Or maybe even as part of the 4 New Year's, possibly even, actually. Anyway, and there was I remember this discussion, and basically the idea that... I think it was about market share as well, and I was saying something like, oh, and people think that you need to have all these games for Linux and these commercial games, some people think it's the way to win people over if you have all these games available, so commercial games available on Humble Bundle or whatever it is. And then the guy who I was chatting to was basically saying as well, but no, you don't need to do that because you have, if you want to look around, actually, there are loads of open source games that are good. But you know, you have to kind of have the motivation to go out there and look around. I mean, you can start in your distro repos for a start and see what's actually available. In the case of say Ubuntu or even Medea for that matter, I think most distros have a lot of games available in the repos themselves. But I know that there are quite a few other games out there that aren't going to be in the repos of these distros that are quite good, or if you there's actually a game I'm thinking of meaning to install and try out, but anyway, if you look around past the repos as well and go to, I don't know, SourceForge or those kind of sites as well, for example, there are loads of open source games out there. So the idea that you actually need to have all these commercial games and that there aren't any good games for Linux. The idea that you need this and that and there aren't any good games that are open source for Linux, that isn't really true. I'm sure if you look around closely enough, you'll find quite a few games that you'll like, or anyone.
By no means am I saying there aren't any good open source games, because I know there are. Just I want this game, and this game is not available to work properly natively on the server.
Oh, right, yeah. I was doing this kind of general thing. But yeah, what I meant is people want particular games, and in certain cases they think like, oh, there aren't any good open source games, and there's not that worth following playing really. So unless I can have these games on my Linux distro, then there's no point running that Linux distro. I might as well just use Windows, or people in general here.
Well, I played World of Warcraft on Linux from beta all the way to Wrath of the Lich King.
How much did you have to tweak it at first to get it to actually work, though?
Until release came out, I had customer support from Blizzard.
Really?
Yep. As soon as the release came out, the Linux customer support was gone in like a month.
I didn't realize that there was that kind of support.
It was just more of just to make sure that, somebody with half a brain could get it up and running online.
But as far as having an actual native client, I don't think they have one, do they?
No, there was one. There was never a native client for Linux in beta or anything else. The support was just to get it to run in line.
Hang on, what's that? Blizzard, there's some sort of support for Wine, is that what you're saying?
No. This was during the Blizzard beta for World of Warcraft. You could send in questions and bug reports of stuff that happened in wine and find out if it was just a problem with wine or if it was a problem with the game.
All right, okay. Yeah, that sounds okay. Although that brings up... Although, when we're talking about wine, I'm thinking of something else now. And this is a good one, actually. A good kind of topic.
Wait, pause really quick. No matter what people say and what people do or don't want to admit, wine is not the same thing as having an actual native plant. Even though I've heard people call it native, it's still not native. Because if you're calling it functions to get something to work, then it's not native.
Wine is not native. Wine is an implementation of the Windows API.
Right.
It's not Windows.
It's almost an emulator, even though they don't want to admit it.
I wouldn't even call it an emulator. It's just an implementation of API calls.
Yeah, I was going to... My thing was sort of to do with what was just said here. But what I was going to say is actually, I'm thinking, okay, native Linux programs, this and that, right? And then Wine, when I'm running programs in Wine, I'm thinking, does it really make that much difference? I mean, I'm talking about from a user point of view, not the technical side. Like you're running this in a thing that's sending through Windows, and rather than this native thing. From a user point of view, does it? You know, if you can have a program that works really well in Wine, and because there isn't a native one in this case, or whatever, or maybe even the native version, you feel like running in Wine and whatever. From a user point of view, when you're switching between a native program and one that's running in Wine. In people's opinions here, I mean, does that really make a difference, you think, for the user? Because I remember actually in the Ubuntu Open Week in the past that I took part of an IRC thing and had the Wine session, and this same kind of question came up to the guy running that session, and I think he basically said at the time that from a user point of view, no, it doesn't really matter that a program isn't really native for Linux, as long as it works well in Wine, because it looks the same and it works because, you know, then it works and you can run that on Linux, basically.
Is that guy a friend of yours?
That was just an old Ubuntu Open Week session that comes to mind while saying this.
Fuck him. He's wrong. If you're running a game in Windows and then you switch to Linux and you run the game in Linux, you're going to take a huge performance hit almost immediately because it's not native. If you're running something like Internet Explorer in Linux, yeah, you can probably get around that. And now as computer hardware has gotten way beefier than it was, say, 6 years ago, you can probably get away with a little bit more now than you could then, but you can't get away with running anything current that requires any type of 3D graphics.
Yeah, but okay, sure. But I've used Wine, obviously, myself here and now, so I assume you lot have as well, and probably most people are going to listen to this, if anyone's actually going to listen to us now. But but from a user point of view, surely, which is my point, if you're running a native program, or Firefox, whatever it is, or you're running a program in Wine, then surely, for a lot of users, it wouldn't really matter that much as long as... performance, as long as the performance is working well enough in Wine. So in that case, running certain programs in Wine is sort of okay, because as long as performance is okay. Does anyone agree with me here? Obviously I would prefer to use native programs, as I'm sure most of you lot would as well, but some people would be perfectly okay with running a program in Wine as long as the performance was okay, and they wouldn't really care too much about a native program in certain cases, even because to run Wine okay in Wine,
you have to compromise so much about Linux. You have to install proprietary drivers. You have to do so much crap and set your system up to break. The best way I found to do it was to basically just dual boot and have the same home directory with different I'd use the same OS, usually Arch or Gentoo, and I dual boot in between 64-bit and 32-bit, and I would also have like my Wine install, and everything was tweaked just for Wine, had my proprietary drivers, all that FUD, and it's a royal pain in the butt because there is no simple just do this and it will work. Every time you get an update, something breaks.
Oh yeah, I mean, Wine is a bit, I think, what's the word, the saying is hit and miss. I think it's all about, it's sort of about luck. It's like you can install whatever program it is, and if you're lucky, it just works. If not, you gotta configure this and that, and then it might work better. But that's the one kind of disadvantage with Wine, from what I remember. But surely having, it's only for certain people, which was my point. Having programming Wine, and okay, we're to good enough performance, of course, because otherwise they're going to be like, oh, this is rubbish, I'll just use Windows. But surely that's better in certain people, instead of not having that app, that program available at all in Linux in any shape or form. There's no native one, there's no way to get it running in Wine, it's just not available. Do you agree with me here? And it obviously depends on program and person in this case as well.
From a non-technical point of view, you're probably right. However, when you can't get the non-technical game working, point of view, it's better.
That's what, sorry, say that again.
Am I breaking up?
No, I kind of interrupted them. I didn't hear you properly. Say what you're saying again.
From a non-technical point of view, if you can just install Wine, and coming from a Windows background, it's a lot harder to say than just to do. Or to... It's a lot harder to do than just say.
Harder to do than just what?
Using Wine for a person coming from Windows, it's a lot harder to use than just say, go do it.
Well, yeah, it's got to be installed, and then you got to install it when you install inside Wine, if that's what you mean.
Yeah. Sorry, I'm trying to raid right now and talk at the same time, and it's hard for me to do that.
Yeah, good luck with that. Raid. He's playing his game. Addict.
All right.
How's that meth treating you, buddy? He must be button spamming. Let's make fun of him.
I'm not button spamming. I'm spamming buttons.
What about, actually, so you've talked about Wine and we've done virtual machines. Right, we've done all that, sure. But, actually, what about this streaming, or maybe the cloud or whatever, you know. Actually, well, there's two things here, really. One is where you could stream or connect to your other computer with your Windows program, and then stream it over to your Linux distro and then use it in there. And then the other one is, of course, this whole cloud gaming thing where you can, you know, you can connect to your Windows Steam game or whatever it is and play that via your Linux distro through another computer or server. But what are people's opinions on that? Do you think that's a good thing that you can like stream, they can access your Windows apps or Windows programs in that kind of way as well? Or do you think like, there's no point really doing that, it should always be native, just run it on the actual computer you're on and things like that?
Two things to say on that. One, did you know that you can stream X11 across the network? And been doing that for years. Two, you can't play games on it.
Yeah, you can do BNC and FreeNX and things like that, and X11 or whatever, sure.
No, X11, like you can stream straight X11, and it's the fastest way to do VNC or anything like that. It's not technically simple. And it's definitely not secure, but it's the fastest.
But I was saying Windows programs, so as well. So yeah.
Yeah, but with the Windows stuff, you can't play games all across an internet connection. It won't work for you. The host machine has to be able to play the game, and the viewing machine has to be able to render what's coming from the host machine.
Well, yeah, but I thought you could do it from. Maybe I'm wrong. I'm not really a gamer, you know. I thought you could actually or possibly stream some of these Windows games now, or what was coming, and that they were going to come to Linux as well, not just Windows to Windows.
You mean Scheme OS?
Well, yeah, possibly that as well, yeah. Yeah, probably Steam OS now, actually, to some extent.
The problem with Steam OS is, why would I want to buy another $500 computer to stream my game to a TV when I'm already using a TV?
Because the $500 computer is going to be cheaper than the $700 PlayStation 4.
But I have a regular computer and I'm playing on a TV, that's what I'm saying. I'm playing on a 32-inch flat screen right now. Why would I buy a Steam box to stream it to a TV when I can already plug it into a TV?
Yeah, my monitor is a 55-inch plasma or a 55-inch LED LCD.
Or just for a more basic argument, why buy the Steam box to play Windows games when you can already hook a Windows PC up to a TV anyway?
Yeah, I see what you mean. But the Steam OS, I mean, yeah, there's a little beta and that, but it's going to, I assume anyway, it's going to probably be turned into quite a lot more as it gets developed, you know. But, yeah.
Well, usually I find that people who game in Windows and people who game in Linux are completely different. People who game in Windows usually either follow a specific genre or a specific company, whereas people who game in Linux just hit everything underneath the sun. I would classify myself as a Windows gamer because Blizzard makes it, I'll play it.
Although, yeah, Linux gaming, some people actually, they kind of, that's their sort of their passion to, I think that's the word, passion, their like interest to, like, basically find out what you can, especially with the whole idea that like I was talking about earlier, about people thinking, oh, there's no great games within for Linux, you've got to run Windows games and all that we were talking about earlier. Especially with that kind of idea, there are some people who want to kind of, I think at least personally, they want to challenge that idea, and they know that actually a Linux distro can be really good for gaming, as long as you're willing to find the games for a start and then install them and all that. And so these people will, they will spend time and they will look around, they'll find these Linux games, they'll install them, and they will set up all these games, and they'll obviously play them as well here and there, and you know, and that's their interest. Because a Linux box or Linux distro, if you want to turn it into a games machine, you know, you can do that. Okay, you might not be playing these games that are really popular with the mainstream because they're aimed at Windows a lot of the time, but you'll have all these other games out there and so on that you can play. So you can have turn into games box, definitely.
See, oh yeah, you can, but why would you want it?
Here's the thing I say. If game developers started making native clients for Linux, then I'd wholeheartedly, not using Steam, but actual native clients, I'd wholeheartedly change to Linux.
I'll pay more than double retail price for a game that I wanted if it ran on Linux. Hell, I'd pay triple. If I could get Diablo 3 to run native on my little laptop here under Linux, and under any Linux that I wanted it to, without having to install freaking proprietary drivers, I would pay $200 for it today, right now.
I don't know if I go that far, but still, I see what you're saying.
Well, I don't play lots of games. I just play, you know, a few that I actually want to play, and the ones that I really enjoy, I would pay a lot to play them.
So do you play WoW still?
Only on a private server.
What private server?
Did you say what private server?
Yeah.
Molten WoW.
What is it? Is it a Lich King?
I play Cataclysm. But it's Lich King Cataclysm. And I think they're talking about implementing vanilla.
I play a vanilla one. well, I haven't played on it for a while, but it's called, I think it's Veronic or Phoenix or something like that. I don't know if you've heard of it.
No, I haven't heard of too many.
Okay, I want to go back. Yeah, what Chris said about if does the game developers make native games for Linux, not requiring Steam, that he would possibly go Linux. I'm assuming he's also referring to the obviously the games he wants to play as well, not just any game. But
not any game, but any game plus the games I play.
Oh, plus the games you play. Okay, fine, fair enough. Humble Bundle actually is kind of a good example. Okay, sometimes you keep buying these bundles and they just give you scene keys really in the soundtrack, so like you said, not that. But that time, and sometimes the bundles are only for Windows and maybe or Mac as well, but they have been putting in I've been buying Humble Bundle for most of them for, I don't know, probably about 3 years now, actually, come to think of it. You know, it's been around quite a while now. And occasionally I've not bought one because of whatever, but point is, because I missed one or whatever. Anyway, point is, what I've noticed is when they have been actually putting in quite a few games in the Humble Bundle that had a native Linux download, I'm talking about tar.gz or something like that, not just a Steam key. So that's happening here and there. And then they got Humble Store more recently, and again, some of those games will have the native download. But yeah, I think I'm not really using Steam yet. I should be, because all these games I bought and so on. But I think what they kind of do is they kind of say, instead of doing a native download with tar.gz or whatever, a lot of them just do Steam to like kind of get out of that, and then a lot of people are happy enough to run it on Steam because they just want to play the game. I mean, I'm not really a gamer, so I'm sure Chris or whoever can comment on this, but is that what you meant as well by like as long as you would switch as long as it's a native download, because otherwise it's just using Steam to do what I just said, or what did you mean?
Well, like Steam, from my point of view on Linux, it's kind of like another version of Wine. Yes, the games run better, but still, it's about the same thing.
Yeah, Steam kind of streams the game, doesn't it? Is that a thing?
Oh, I'll be right back, guys. Gotta go check my laundry.
Yeah, Steam kind of streams the game, doesn't it? Or right. Sort of.
I thought the games ran completely natively.
But anyway, yeah, if it was proper downloads and not just Steam keys, then that's good, because otherwise otherwise it's kind of making you use Steam to play the game, isn't it? Which kind of defeats the whole point of having the freedom to have a native download.
My problem with the whole proprietary thing is if it's proprietary and good, I don't have a problem with it.
No, that's okay. My case, some people are going to disagree there, but yeah, it's all like a personal choice about what software you run and what type of software.
For instance, if I created a program made for Linux and closed the source, so only I had the source, I mean, I don't necessarily see any problem with that. And gave it away for free, or even sold it for that matter.
The selling point, actually, with open source or free software, free as in software freedom, you are allowed. You know, you are allowed to sell the software. Richard Stallman did his article a long time ago about, if you go to GNU.org and then the philosophy section, there's, you know, it's absolutely great article done by Richard Stallman there, and one of them is exactly about that it's okay to sell free software. You can sell it and make money, because it's not about being free as in price, it's all about being free as in software freedom and what that means. So yeah, you can put a CD on CD and sell the CD, whatever you want to do, that's fine. But like I said, it's just like a choice. If you want to do a program and you want to make it closed source, or you want to open source it, or whatever, it's a choice of the developer, really. Is someone still here or not?
I'm here.
Yeah, he's going quiet again.
Well, I'm just kind of still trying to talk and game at the same time.
We've got someone else here now, Bitweasel. Were you on here before?
Yeah, I was in here before under a different name.
Oh, with a different name? Yeah, the other Canadian person, I think, or something like that.
Yeah, I had a different name.
So what distro do you use then? Bitweasel, or what's your actual name?
I use Fedora 20.
What's your actual name? What's your real name?
Eric.
Well, it matters. Huh? What's that?
Eric.
Eric, right. Why are you on Fedora? That's for, yeah, why, loads of people on Fedora, actually, and Arch and all the rest of it, but... Why are you on Fedora? I mean, what... Yeah.
Why? I just found that it's easy to use, it's stable. The packages are relatively new and fresh.
Yeah, but, I mean, yeah, that applies to most distros. I've used those as distros, or quite a few since I started using those. And now I'm into this Badia 1, but my dear distro, but, yeah. Need a second day now. Just under half an hour.
Half an hour for what?
the next day, the 2nd January, you know, time zones.
Oh, the thing with the... The countdown thing is still going?
No. That was done. That's done. This is just a, like extra thing, but it's just turned into a really long one this time.
How many hours has it been?
Guess.
39.
Who said 39?
Me.
No, not quite. I think you're fully joking there as well when you said 39.
42.
No, actually about 37.
No, I meant for the extra thing itself. So, but yeah, for the whole thing, sure, it's probably been about what you said, but for the extra thing, how long was that?
It's been about 10 to 11 hours.
Yeah, nearly 12 hours.
I would know. Are they recording usually the whole thing. One? Pardon me? Were you asking if we're going to use this one?
I asked if, are they usually this long?
No, I think last year some people hung around for a couple hours after the show, maybe 2 or 3 hours, but normally not this long. Normally not this long. I think pretty much what happened was a number of people came in right before the end of this one because it was actually early enough in the morning that most people could actually get up, but not too early. So a bunch of people hung out afterwards. So me and several other people went back to bed, and we just left our recorders running, and people have just been going ever since.
Is this going to be uploaded, the whole thing?
I don't know about the after-show stuff. Definitely the first 26 hours will.
Wow.
I think the after stuff is going up as well.
How much does a 26-hour audio thing take? How much space?
It's actually not too bad. I've been recording in FLAC, and I think I figured out it was like 5.8 or 6 gig.
That's it?
You know, you consider that basically it's mostly just people talking and over mumble, which is just a little bit better than like cell phone quality. So it's not real high bandwidth or anything. It's not real high signal level.
You can turn the quality settings up.
Well, some of the best discussions are in the so-called after stuff.
Yeah, I don't know what will happen to the after show stuff. It depends. They may just actually make it like filler stuff and leave it kind of sitting as like extra episodes in the queue. If there is nothing to run, let's go ahead and pop these out.
Well, yeah, that works, I guess. And it will last a lot longer that way as well, actually.
Well, yeah, plus this wasn't really like a coordinated show or anything, so it's not like part of the actual countdown and all, doing all the time zones and stuff.
True.
What show do you guys do?
What podcast? Is that what you mean?
I said, what show do you guys do?
Which what do we do?
Show.
Well, I'm on Colonel Panic Oddcast, and I do my own show called Cerebral Mix, which is a music show. And this is HPR, so this will all be on Hacker Public Radio. So, number of different shows.
None. I've been on guest on Tech Bytes and Quirin's, and I did this last year, so, and now I'm doing it again, and that's it, really. Are you two on the show as well, or do you do one?
Who?
You and Chris.
Oh no, I'm not on any show. Well, other than now, I'm on here during this, and but no, not really.
Not really.
I mean, if by in a show you mean just going to the Mumble, then yes. If you mean like host it, then no.
Well, yeah, I suppose it can mean both, really. If you've been a guest on any show, I don't host a show, but I've been a guest on two, and I've been on this twice. So, what about for you two?
Well, right now I'm on this, and I've been on during Linux Unplugged at Jupiter Broadcasting.
What about you, Chris?
Just this one at Jupiter Broadcasting stuff. Guests.
It's gone quite quiet, hasn't it?
Yep.
Probably because people are... Well, a lot of people have gone now, anyway.
Yeah, I think I might cut the recording in 20 minutes or so. Seems like there's not a whole lot left that's going on.
Yeah, I was sort of thinking something like that as well, where maybe the recording should stop in about 20 minutes or so. It'll be the second tier. Unless somebody starts an awesome chat off, of course, but it seems that it's pretty much dying out now. But although if it does stop in about 20 minutes or so, then we've got the whole of the UK anyway in the first as well recorded. Yeah, that's something, isn't it?
Well, we have 12 hours after the official show too, so it'd be 6 p.m. and this ended at 6 a.m. my time.
Yeah, and it'll be 12 hours of after show as well. And it's not too crazy to release it all as well. With the after show as well, I mean.
Well, and it'll get cut down too because of all the blank spaces.
Well, yeah. Actually, Eric, are you... No, that's somebody else who was on Quirin. It's called Eric, I think, unless it's you. But no, I don't think it is.
Sorry, I missed what you said there.
No, I was just thinking Eric. There was an Eric on Quirin's for a bit, but I think that's somebody else. Not this Eric. Actually, who's left here now, other than me and Sen Chaser?
I'm here. I'm just in the middle of gaming.
I think Cobra 2 just stepped away for a few minutes. Oh, and Chatter's here too.
Yeah, I'm helping people in IRC.
Yeah, I should probably kill this off in about 20 minutes or so, like you said. Because there's not much to put in anymore, really. That's worth releasing, it seems.
Well, then, of course, Cobra comes back, and now it'll start all over again.
I'm back. It's starting all over again.
Actually, yeah, I was talking about cutting the recording, in, at least from my side, in about 15 minutes or so.
Oh, well, have fun. Ken's still recording.
Yeah, he was going to cut his later tonight, too. I said originally I might wait till about 10 if it kept going, but it depends on how much is going on.
I don't know. I heard somebody talking just a minute ago. I hadn't heard all night.
You have to, basically, it's all up to you, Cobra. You have to make it all interesting in the next 15 minutes, or, well, Sanchez is cutting the whole thing, recording off.
Well, we could talk about cocaine and its effects and how much it burns when you snort it.
You have experience there. I don't have anything to any frame of reference for that.
Yeah, I don't either, but I've seen people do it. It drives me nuts when they do it at work.
You've seen more than I have, then. I've never actually seen somebody snort coke. I've only seen it on TV and in movies.
Aw, man, it's pretty bad out here. The people are pretty open about it. They'll just, like, do... They'll pour a little bit out on their thumb and do a bump, like, walking down the road.
You live in California or something?
I live in what?
California.
No, I live in Canada.
Oh.
Where in Canada?
Calgary.
That makes sense. Taking after their mayor.
The Wild Wild West. Oh,
that's
Toronto, Jimmy. Get your news straight, you ignorant American.
Hey, hey, America made up everything. I'll have you know that. Invented everything.
I'm American, and they didn't invent the telephone.
Yeah, they did. I'm just kidding. I'm being sarcastic.
I know. I'm just ribbing you for the fun of it.
I think it was Alexander Graham Bell, who was American, who invented the telephone.
Yeah, but where did he do it?
It doesn't matter. He was American.
Not really sure he was American.
You're not sure if Alexander Graham Bell was American?
Yeah, he might have later became American, but when he invented the telephone, he was in New Brunswick and Nova Scotia.
And look at the internet. I mean, an American invented that.
An American invented Usenet as well.
There you go.
But I'm pretty sure there wasn't a single American that invented the dang wheel.
The president invented the internet.
This is an honest question, and not, I'm not trying to troll, but was Nova Scotia part of Canada when the telephone was invented? I know some of the different parts of the country joined at different times.
It definitely would have been part of Canada, or okay, at least the Commonwealth. But at the time, it would have still been controlled by England, so does that make it an English invention?
Well, looking at Wikipedia, he was actually born in Scotland, but his citizenship was UK, US, and Canada, and his residences were in the US, Canada, and the UK.
That's beside the point. Everything was invented in America, and then it got outsourced.
Yeah, white rap might have been invented in America, but the Canadians do it better. Yeah, I know. For you Texans, that's an oxymoron.
I'm not a Texan, so...
Oh, where are you from?
America.
Obviously. Where are you from?
Colorado. That's where I grew up most of my life.
And it's gone quiet again.
Oh, I'm just eating. I haven't eaten anything all day. Give me a break.
I'm sorry.
No, you're supposed to give me a Kit Kat.
I don't
know. A Kit Kat Android, eh? A Kit Kat Android. Earlier.
No, a Kit Kat candy bar.
Yep, see, America invented Kit Kats.
But they didn't invent the Cadbury Cream Egg.
How do you know?
No, that was England.
Actually, they did, because America invented...
Actually, America invented...
Cadbury Swiss, man.
No, Cadbury Cream Egg is saying English. Anyway, it's weird. Yeah, I had some just towards the end of the year because they were selling them already, but way before Easter. But yeah, no, nice things, Cadbury Cream Eggs.
But America invented rabbits, so actually they did invent.
You know why all us dang foreigners hate Americans?
I'm just trolling. I don't really believe that.
Well, I know. I'm just telling you to stop trolling. It's getting annoying.
Okay, I won't do it anymore.
Oh, no worries. Don't stop completely. You know, it helps to liven up a conversation every once in a while. You just got to do it in moderation like 330 does. Or, wait, no. Exactly the opposite of how 330 does it.
Like Ronas does. Wait, who's 330?
Google annoying.
That would be Pinguy OS.
Or, wait, maybe it's Google annoying Ogcast Planet. Shoot, that just returns Etyar.
Seriously, or are you just trolling?
I'm just trolling, but wouldn't that be funny?
Well, the search results for Ogcast Planet annoying. About the 10th one down is Dev Random Cast.
Do you see the words Etyar anywhere on there? Or maybe Soylent Green?
I do not see Etyar. And no Soylent.
I still never figured out what Soylent Red was. And I don't even remember the name of the movie to watch to go figure it out.
Actually, Soylent Green is the movie.
Oh, I've got an idea for a few minutes.
What's your idea?
An idea, yeah.
Speak now or forever hold your peace.
Patience, patience. It's nearly time.
Patience is a virtue I ain't got.
It's about 3 minutes and 30 seconds before I shut off the recording on my side.
Yeah.
Are you timing this, man?
You might be, but you just need to go in that case.
Was you're waiting for me to shut off the recording before you actually say what you want to talk about?
No. I want it in the recording.
You should give him a countdown, Soundy.
No, I'm not going there. No countdowns for this. But if he's going to do something, well, he can do it, because then I'll just get up and walk away and leave it running.
That sounds like I'm going to do something really bad, but that's not the case.
Well, no, what I'm saying is I'll just walk away. I'm just saying I'm going to go get dinner and stuff and leave it running.
I'm eating dinner, man.
I still have to cook mine. I've got a ham steak here I'm going to cook.
I had an eggplant casserole Barney made up, and just had to throw it in the oven, so did that, and it got done. It was pretty good. I don't think I like eggplant, but I like the rest of it.
Oh, we lost Eric. Oh, well.
We still have Chatter, Cobra, John Doe, Seb, and possibly one of the other guys might come back, like Sons of Man or Verbal or William.
Are we still recording?
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah.
There are still three recordings running.
Ah, the second day.
On the second day of New Year's, HBR gave to me more crap than I can listen to.
Oh, I had any time for what I was going to do anyway, so.
Double speed doesn't ear good.
I can't understand the foreigners on double speed.
I can't understand the foreigners on regular speed. I have found a couple of MP3 players that can do 1.2, 1.5, etc., though.
I like how we just offended everybody who's not American.
Are you kidding? Earlier we offended everybody who is American.
Heck, we've just basically pissed off everybody in the whole planet, so it's no big deal now.
As long as they're being treated equally, that's all that matters. So my philosophy is just treat everyone like shit.
I was going to do a 10987654321. Okay, happy 2nd January 2014 UK. And yeah, it's a Thursday. That was basically my idea because, yeah, I'm on the 2nd of January now.
Almost time for you to go to bed again.
Woo-hoo. Congratulations. Now get lost.
All right, I'm going to leave the recording running and then I'll be back later.
See you, Soundy.
You got to be back in another hour. I hope you've kept it up so far.
That's a long time to keep it up.
Yeah, that'd be a real long time to keep it up, man. I already kept it up for 26 hours. That was hard enough.
Well, if you can keep it up that long, call friend, because you're going to have a fun time.
Hell, call 26 or 27.
I could, in a way, I could stay up all night and do this, but I don't plan to do that, so...
26 or 27 or 3:30, right?
Isn't that just like calling one? Oh no, he'll bring his social network with him. That's probably a better bet. Just call 3:30. I feel much better now that I've had breakfast at 5 p.m.
Yeah, I woke up at about 2, made some more fries, and well, that's really about it.
I said goodnight last night, or this morning, and I went and I was on my knees on the bed doing something, and then I woke up and my face was hanging off the side of the bed, and I was in an awkward position.
Oh yeah, I think my little thing I did go into the sound chase for recording, but I assume so. Happy New Year. Happy 2nd January 2014 UK, whatever I did here.
I wonder if this will just be a long-running thing now, as people get up and get ready to go back to work.
What, a show Maybe. A day?
No, just like a continuous show from now on.
It's almost like a party line or a chat room.
Ooh.
Eventually the recordings will get cut, and that's that really, isn't it?
Well, it's okay, there's still streams and mirrors. The only requirement is for some idiot to call in. By some, I'm obviously referring to all of y'all, not myself. Y'all are a pretty non-confrontational bunch.
Like what somebody put in the IRC, just I've just seen it. Have we called the Guinness Records?
I don't think they'll take a recording, especially put together 15 times, all of the sound taken out. They might want to watch, though.
Uh-oh. Pegwolf said he's coming back.
Yeah, seems so. Well, anyway, this is quite a nice way to start 2014, isn't it?
It's going to be a lot to listen to, a lot to take in, and a lot to ignore.
Who's going to get ignored?
Well, it's going to go on for so long that eventually people are just going to kind of tune it out and listen to it as background noise like a fan.
Yeah, those who get far enough. Especially if all this Apple stuff goes up. But yeah, which I think was a plan, so yeah.
I hope it doesn't go up as a regular show.
Did you say something?
Exactly.
I think Sound Chaser was suggesting it just goes in when there's like nothing else to put out, sort of thing. And in bits after the other thing's gone up.
And now, another 20 minutes of our regular show, just so that you can suffer until you put in your own episode.
Yeah, something like that, possibly. And a message for the future, actually, or the some that person who might be out there who actually listened, or not more than one person, actually, who is out there and listened to the whole 26 hours of the first show, if you like, to begin with, and then which was, you know, that's impressive already, but now you've moved on to these shows that they've actually put up, which I assume so, or you wouldn't be hearing this in the recording. But anyway, now they've moved on to putting these shows up, and you've been listening to every single hour, and as it's from the beginning of to all the way up to now, and I just want to say congratulations, and you must be really into podcasts, but that's awesome, and I hope you can join us for the for next year's New Year special, and tell us who you are if you have done this.
Well, I'll be here next year if I'm not working.
Yeah, but that was for the person who might have, you know, listened to all the way up to here in the future when this stuff is getting released, you know.
Yeah, but next year I'll be with the wife, so I'll probably only be around for maybe an hour or two.
I don't have a life, so I'll be here.
Wife, not life.
Either or.
Although saying that, with the last one, I meant to actually listen to the whole 24 hours, and that was the plan, and I obviously been chatting on here and there myself, but I started listening to a few recordings, and I think I got in about 6-9 hours in or something in it altogether, and then I kind of stopped or whatever, but yeah. And then of course I also skimmed through the recordings, finding myself so that I could listen to myself speak and things like that. But even though I don't actually like listening to my own voice in a recording, which I'm sure applies to most people, but they don't really like listening to their own voice. But yeah. Or does anyone here actually like listening to their own voice, a recording of it? Like in a podcast? Huh?
I do.
Why is that?
He likes tooting his own horn.
Howdy, is anyone still here, or is everyone idling?
Oh yeah, we're still here.
Okay, no one is here.
I had to get door to get AFK room in this room. It's one of the most annoying things about this with open speakers, that people just idle for days. Switch off and sleep, still be on the mumble.
Well, we just like to think that they're passed out at their desk.
It's gone off the web, which means that I can talk.
The red lips are on. Shut up. The red lips are on. No talking. No talking. They're still on.
Hey, Chris USA. Who's Chris USA? Hello, Chris. There are quite a few Chris's around the Minutes World.
Stop killing the show, Pegwall.
Chris, are you talking at all? Or are you just listening? Just gotta say hello. Chat is normally pretty cheap.
You're just gonna go down through the list alphabetical?
Yeah, well, I'm
talking.
I was just thinking of something, actually. If this goes on for another 12 hours, that if this goes on for another 12 hours, well, like, maybe world record or sure, but I was thinking more for Marcus anyway. Yeah, he was one from New Zealand, I think. Yeah, because that's right, isn't it?
only till anyway, 10 o'clock in the afternoon here. I'm sorting
that. With one from New Zealand, it'll be like a 3-day podcast because I'll be in the you'll be in the 3rd of January.
What's the longest podcast on ever? I think, does anyone know?
I don't think anyone cares.
I know. We could always do something. It's for fun to see if the Guinness does World Records actually accept it. It'd be fun.
Unless they give me money, not interested.
What you mean with this one? Or?
Yeah, this has been going, I know people chat and mumble like all the time, but no one ever records it. You don't record a full mumbled session for like 20 hours. There must be a world record on someone trying to do that just to get into the Guinness Book of Records. Probably one of those records no one cares about.
Yeah, it could be actually. And someone was saying nicely about that, but I'm not like, have you called Guinness? But maybe there is seriously some sort of record out there.
The first link for longest podcast ever goes to a Facebook page of a 25-hour podcast live.
We've beaten that one.
Really?
You should go and submit something. You've recorded the whole show. You get someone in here and go and get the world record.
Now, to beat the record, do we all have to do it like the whole time, or like would they count shifts of people?
I say that this counts just of people. We've been recording it, so we can prove that the podcast has been going for 20 hours.
Soundy was 26 hours or more.
Yeah. That'd probably accept it. I mean, technically they'd accept it, wouldn't they? Hello, people. I mean, you guys have been talking constantly. There hasn't been one single gap in the whole 20-odd hours, 30 hours that you guys have been talking.
Well, there have been little gaps, but other than that, not really, no.
Yeah, I would have been here sooner, but I didn't know this was still going on, and apparently Cobra 2 sent me a text message, and my phone's broken, so...
I was here for the first...
You should fix that.
I've been coming in and out, but I actually thought this would have stopped by now, so I haven't really been back for the last 10 hours or so. But yeah, as long as someone's been, there's been people in here and someone's been talking.
Most of the time.
Mm. It's slowed down a little bit sometimes, like in the mid-afternoon here. Which would be lunchtime for Eastern?
Get people that do that anyway. Like, some people talk, some people listen. When you have 3 or 4 talkers in the room, they can talk forever.
Especially if they're Pegwall, who's being strangely quiet. He must
Williams,
be sober.
William's worse than me. He'll talk forever. He must be alright, man.
Well, yesterday I was quiet because there was a lot of fantastic discussion, and I didn't really want to interrupt it.
Yeah. Okay, today's dev random. Fix it.
Well, I'm not going to go, hey, fuckers.
Instead of the yell about...
too late!
Instead of the yell about... I suppose you guys, being Americans, mostly will think it's a joke. About the Piers Morgan thing, I suppose you would have seen that on CNN or somewhere where Brett Lee was knocking his head off and he broke his rib. I'm not very happy with that at all. Being I've applied the game before, and I thought that was really sportsmanship conduct from... The whole lot of people that were involved, personally. And
I got no clue what you're talking about, bud.
Have you not seen? I suppose none of you guys watch CNN, do you?
No.
You know Piers Morgan, the talk show host, the race, he replaced Larry King, right? English guy. You guys must know who Piers Morgan is.
No, man. I
do.
I watch mainstream media when my arm is twisted behind my back and I'm forced to.
Anyway, he's English.
I think he might be joking or whatever, but yeah.
Yeah. He's English, so obviously he likes cricket, right? And there's Ashes. Whenever England and Australia play each other, it's called the Ashes. So there's a series going on in Australia at the moment. And the English cricket team are getting actually done by Australia. But 6 months ago, it was complete opposite. England actually won. But they've had players go home on tour halfway through, and players announce their retirement and all sorts of crap. There's like heaps of crap stuff going on within the side. And what Piers Morgan, that's not getting out, but you can tell what's going on if you play the game. What Piers Morgan decided to do, he thought it'd be quite brainy of him to face one of the Australian bowlers, 6 balls, which is an over, and prove that he could do it. The trouble was, though, so they got the guy that retired from the Australian cricket team last year. He's 36, but he's still one of the quickest bowlers in the world today, I'd say. He bowls about 150k. He's actually really quick. Most test bowlers bowl about 135, 130. And that's like at the top level. And if you're in a lower grade player, probably bowl about 80 Ks, if that. Right, so there's a big, huge difference. And Piers Morgan reckoned he could pace him. So they recorded the whole thing on national TV live. And Brett Lee decided that he was going to take, who apparently is good, quite good friends with Morgan, decided he was going to take his head off. So he basically what he did, you can't do this in cricket anyway, although people bowl bouncers, you only get one or two every six balls. What he did was actually bolt full pace for a long run up, and he aimed for his head. Now he actually cracked two of his ribs, and he busted his shoulder, I think. And was just aiming at his head the whole time. It was really dangerous. Like it was actually kind of gone with the terms of being dangerous. The only person that actually said anything, the Australians think it's a big joke, yahooing and everything else. And I've just discovered today, this is 2 days ago, that he's had x-rays and stuff, and he's actually broken his rib. And his wrist, I think his wrist was the one that was broken. And everyone just thinks it's a big joke. It's like, that's not very good for kids that are playing the sport at all. And it's not actually what happens in a game at cricket at all. And it's just, all these loons are going on about, oh, it's a dickhead, he deserved it, and all this crap. And it's like, oh, whatever. I just got really pissed off with it from an umpire's perspective. And it was actually New Zealander that actually came up with one of the greatest bowlers ever played. And he ain't bowled the paces, he wasn't a quick bowler. And he actually said that he could have killed him. And both Pierce and frickin' Brett Lee had a go at him in the media and said that he doesn't know what he's talking about. I'm like going, what a bunch of idiots. But anyway,
Piers Morgan is the crazy British guy. Well, he's not really that crazy. That talked to Alex Jones, the guy that kept screaming 1776.
He actually has a very similar personality to me. But I'm saying most people think I'm a dickhead, especially in cricket. The point is that it shouldn't have happened. It's like me going into a ring of Mike Tyson and people with the cameras and stuff, and people telling Mike Tyson to knock me out. It's dangerous. For a start.
So, who wants to be the first to make a Bond joke?
Go for it. We talked about cricket in this podcast, so I thought it'd be a good way to bring it up. Wait, go for it and carry on. What, Bond? Okay, I need to know who Chris is. It's annoying me. I know four Chris's and they're hanging around mumble servers and are from the US, and it's really annoying me. I need to know who Chris is.
It's Chris.
It could be Chris from Jeopardy Broadcasting. It could be Chris from the Pink Guy comes in as Chris sometimes. It could be anyone.
Evidently, it's Chris
it's
USA.
Not Chris. This is Chris USA.
Okay, well, you're not in the US.
It's. I am in the USA.
Oh, that's right. I'm
not Chris from last, though.
Yeah, okay. Let's see, that's what him and I aren't talking. Oh, no, he's all right. I'm all right with Chris at the moment. I'm surprised he hasn't popped in, actually. Be aware that this is on. Half his mumble server people are actually coming there. That's all good. Welcome, Chris.
Yeah.
You know, one thing I do find absolutely kind of cool and amazing when it comes to doing, like, it started with Linux Cranks and now KPO and Tilt and Dev Random and all this, but just the people I talk to now, like, I will talk to, like, my real-life friends and go, oh, I was talking to my friend from Australia, or, you know, my friend that lives in Canada, et cetera, et cetera. And they're like, how do you know all this about all these people? And I'm like, because I talk to them weekly.
Yeah, I do,
and that just blows their minds.
Yeah, they don't get it. I can't talk anything technology here. It's like, I know that some people in Linux have different personalities and just live online, but, I mean, I'm quite social outside, or used to be outside, in real life, and it's just I haven't been able to get that because I'm in a new city. I don't know anyone. It's quite hard for me to actually talk to someone with the same interest. I always talk online.
Well, you have to also look at it. Most people, you look at, say, their Facebook account, God forbid, and you'll see classmates, people that they haven't talked to and haven't wanted to talk to in the last 20 years, and those are the people they mark as friends.
I know. I've got fed up with Facebook. Every family member of mine is on there, including my mother and my father that don't talk to each other, so that's always interesting when they get online. It's just like, I'm just like, what the hell do I do on here? My wife doesn't like me even commenting on Facebook. She doesn't understand anything that I type. So it's like, well, there's no point me even being on Facebook. I should really just close my account. I probably will think I died or something.
Hey, could only be an improvement as far as closing your account, I mean.
But then, like I mentioned Google Plus and just don't understand it. One of those people understand how Google Plus works at all.
Of course not, because that's the thing. Most people concentrate on the people they've known, as opposed to in technology, we concentrate on the people we talk to, the people that are available. You know, go talk to your neighbor, go talk to a neighboring country.
Not to change the subject, but are you really John Doe? Because I've been looking for you for a long time.
I'll go and help Mr. Gadgets out. I'll be back. There he is. Mr. Gadgets, do you need some help with your mic?
Are you serious
about having looked for me, or are you serious? Or are you just making a joke about the name?
I'm making a joke about the name.
Am I still having? Oh, okay. I think I am.
Yeah.
That's not really your name, though, right?
I was having netbook
issues.
Somebody, I think I met. I missed some of this. Some netbook issues, but somebody was saying something about how like. He goes and talks to his real friends, and then he was talking to somebody in Australia or something, and then I missed whatever it was. What was that?
Are we just saying Facebook, like on Facebook, how people just talk to, they list people as friends, and they never even speak to them. I'm the same on Facebook. I pretty much just have family members and people I went to school with, and I don't even pay Facebook any attention at all anymore. And we're just saying, like, most of my friends are actually online now, so I'm always talking on Mumble, pretty much.
Really, to some degree?
Oh, yeah.
To some degree, Facebook is like the new classmates.com.
Yeah, it's been taken over. See, I was reading something about Facebook. Apparently, 150,000 teenagers are leaving it by the day. Apparently, there's just idling accounts everywhere because they don't delete their account, they leave it on. But they're moving over to like, what's that, their pinned interests and everything else.
Well, of course, they have to leave something for their parents to look at.
Yeah, and their parents are going, this is the greatest thing ever. And anyone else is going, no, it's not anymore.
The only reason I use Facebook is so I can view my nephews and nieces.
And that's pretty much it. I like to keep in touch with my family, so it's good for that. But really, I hardly ever paid any attention. And the only really other comment I made on Facebook recently was when my great aunt died, and I knew that she died, so I went to the funeral. I never had much to do with her anyway. But the point is that, I mean, I just don't use Facebook. My wife loves Facebook.
Yeah.
Play games and, you know, play a game all the time. That's all she does on it. And she can check out. She used to play that. I think she's into something else now. That's the Simpsons or something. It's on her freaking iPhone. It goes off at 3 o'clock in the freaking morning. You know, visitors or some crap. Fuck, that's annoying.
I don't like Facebook either.
But, yeah, I mean, all she does is Facebook. She also likes to check up on her workmates too, like when they, she's the manager, so if someone doesn't turn up, they'll wait for you as a friend to see someone goes to a party on New Year's Eve and calls them sick.
Hey, got a technical question.
Yeah.
If I were to run just the kernel with the KVM like I was talking about earlier, and I have a Windows virtual machine, will I take a performance hit on my network, on my interface going out to my real interface? Will I take a performance hit, latency hit? I don't know. Did that question make sense?
Are you saying why would you take a performance hit?
No,
or
I'm asking,
what's the use of doing it?
I'm asking.
Probably to a software beast Ethernet card. So to some degree, it probably won't be noticeable for most applications, but there will be some because you're going to be processing it in software.
I reckon we should go for the... We can make this official for the world record. There is everyone. We told the admins. I'm going to organize it. Make something to be remembered by.
Now, in KVM or Xen, I know in VirtualBox there's a limitation. Is there a limitation on the video memory? Because in VirtualBox you can only go up to 128 megs. And it's kind of useless to use 120 megs if you have a 1 gig card.
Well, it's not necessarily useless. It's just not as useful as using a 1 gig card.
Right. So how can I tap into all of the video memory on my video card is what I'm asking, using a virtualized solution.
use more than one VM, maybe?
There's no settings like within KVM to set it to 1 gig or whatever?
I'm not sure. I don't usually use KVM.
Does anyone else in this channel use KVM?
Nope, not me. Kyler, you'd be someone that knows all about that stuff. You might be able to help.
Who does?
Kyler's not. He's a G2 user and probably knows all about how that stuff all works. Kyler, are you still here? Cobra, sorry. About Wenzel. Mr. Gadget, can you actually hear us? I just wondered if his mic was working. Cobra, you might be able to help him. You know all about that file system stuff and things, don't you?
There's people muted. There's John KT4KV that's muted. Yeah, he's talking.
There's a couple people. The only thing I don't like about this channel is people don't go AFK. Or they don't actually go to an AFK room, which I might have a talk to Thor about. And you don't know who's online and who's not. But I know that Chad is here because he's just listed something in the chat room. And I don't know if Mr. Gadgets can hear us, so he might have to flash his lips or something if he doesn't want to talk. And I'm packing Kakura, it looks like. I'd say he's our otherling. Well, the dude's got both his mics muted. And John KT might be otherling, so it might be Grey Beard, I think. And Ken Fallon's recording still, but probably idling. But it's probably, and William hasn't spoken for a while, so he's probably idling. I don't know about verbal, so there's still him in the room, I'd say.
And Sound Chaser is recording, I think, still as well.
So he must be here, but idling.
Well, he's AFK. William's been idle for 14 hours.
Yeah, he should really, he used to annoy me in the Jupyter Broadcasting Mumble server when he used to do that. That's just why I know it's a Mumble thing. I hate people that like you think you're talking to them and they would have thought about leaving just for a couple of minutes to make a coffee or whatever. But they end up going away full time, not come back for like 10 hours. There was one guy in here that, I showed up one day and he was in Linux Basics, but he left it, and he was a young kid, but he left his mic on, and he left it on for 12 hours. He didn't realise he was still in Mumble with his mic on, because he didn't have press to talk, so it was on continuous, and he kind of know how Mumble works, so you could hear his mother having a go at him to clean his room up. That was quite funny.
Well, did you get a good recording?
No, I was thinking about it in time. You see, I'm not that sort of person, John. But yeah, it would have been quite funny. I had to go and get Dor from Dor's chat room to get him off. Because I've never been an admin in this room. I really don't see any reason why I need to be. I don't even know who the admins are in OpenSpeak. I think Dor's one. I'm not sure who the other admins are.
So this station right here is called Hacker Public Radio?
Yes, it is.
Is that hacker in the traditional sense, or in the sense that everyone calls it today?
Because I don't even know what hacker. I wondered about that too. Because normally, if you say the word hacker, it means you're hacking into something.
A hacker is a person who does something in a strange or unusual fashion. Textbook definition.
I'm a hacker then.
You can maybe that as well. But no, the hacker. Yeah, you think somebody breaks into this and that, or if you don't really know what the term means. But that's the media getting things wrong. Actually, a hacker is a programmer. So you hack the code of the program, you edit, you change the code of that program, yeah? So actually, a good example actually is Richard Stallman, because what he does is when he signs people's signatures, I think he always does this now, but anyway, he's got his little thing where he basically signs it with his name and I think he puts hacking freedom as well. So there you go. So, and then it's not the like what the media think, that's all wrong, but that's where the terms ended up, how it's getting used.
So to speak, he does hack freedom. He hacks law, he hacks freedom, he hacks software, he hacks all sorts of things. I mean, it's not just computers that can be hacked, it's electronics, it's society.
It's a different meaning. If you take your computer apart and build one, technically in that term you're a hacker. The public's, it's the way the public see it, but they don't understand what that means. They really don't. Even the media, most of them are pretty basic too, a lot of the reporters and stuff, and they don't understand what that means.
To a degree...
My point was for that question. Like, I read in the Fedora 6 book for certification that talks about hackers and how they're programmers, and they wanted to open up the source and allow other people to look at it and change it to their needs. That's what I meant by traditional hacker, as opposed to how people interpret that word today as something being evil.
Yeah, I know, because basically under that term, every Linux user is a hacker, pretty much, whether they're a programmer or whatever, because they're always changing their desktop. They're on Linux for a start, so technically we're all hackers.
Well, that's exactly what it comes down to, someone that does something in a strange or unusual fashion. That can be anything from opening a door without a key to simply opening a computer without a key, or popping open the case to the computer, something that most people would never even imagine doing. At one point, and at many points, many manufacturers were putting stickers on the sides of the cases and saying, well, if you break this sticker, your warranty is void. Except if you need a better graphics card or better memory, you need to break the sticker.
Well, I broke my warranty I must admit, I don't worry about warranties now with computers, because technically under the warranty law, even in this country, if you take your computer to open your computer case, you've broken your warranty. If you want to upgrade your RAM, and it's quite strict, because even the computer shops are technically breaking the warranty, because when they do RAM for people, the computer shop holds that upgrade.
And that's where it gets rather interesting, too, because in the U.S., there was a lawsuit over that. The issue is this. There are user serviceable parts inside the case. There are also technician serviceable parts. As long as a person is reasonably competent to replace it, they are a technician replacing the parts inside of it. They are a hacker, at least to that degree.
Yeah, I agree. I do that all the time. I mean, my main thing is hardware and software. I mean, I've got my video card just out of the box. well, I haven't got the back on it. I've changed the whole case, everything. So I just find that bit archaic, some of the rules. They really need to upgrade them.
And now if you look through most computer manuals, they give you instructions on upgrading various parts of them. Whereas before, you're not supposed to open the case.
I've got a question. How many people have hard drives with no case on it at the moment?
I think I've got 3 sitting here.
Yeah, exactly.
Are you talking hooked up?
Oh, just, yeah, well, it's something that you can turn on. I quite often have if I'm mucking around in the case, don't have the front case on it. Just take it off and leave it off for a little bit.
Oh, no, I've got external cases without the casing on them. I've got one of my computers is sitting here without the case side on it. It's off, nonetheless.
I do that all the time. I've got 2 cases in the back room, which I don't use, which have got the cases off and everything out and stuff.
Well, it depends. A lot of the case design that goes into the mini and micro form factors, and especially the small form factors, if you're running it, you want to leave the case on, because when it comes down to the small form factors, the way that the air blows through it is very specific to the heat dissipation in the case. And you can overheat the system by taking the case top off or the case side off with it running.
Interesting. Yeah, I know you can overheat it without the case on.
Is it dead? I had to run off.
I know someone had a question before. I think you can answer about something to do with file systems or something. What was that again?
VMs.
I had a little bit to do with VirtualBox, but not too much. I know Fedora's got a new virtual VM thing called Boxes, which I have a try.
Yeah, Chris USA had a question about utilizing full memory in VMs.
Yeah. How to do that. You've got a memory bar with your RAM, which you can adjust. You know about that, though, I take it. And settings. And it just lets you set how much RAM you're going to give the VirtualBox. So I don't know if you can use it for your total RAM you have on your total machine. Because you've got it in a VirtualBox, so you won't be able to use all your memory. It's sharing the memory that you've already got. I don't know if someone can correct me. I'm not an expert on VirtualBox.
You folks were talking about Facebook earlier. I can't tell you how much I hate Facebook. The only time my family talks to me is around holidays, so I just ignore them.
Yeah, that's the same with me. I haven't been on Facebook for over 2 weeks. And as I said, my wife gets annoyed. She goes, don't say that because my family might like you saying that. It's like, well, fine, I won't even say anything. I just don't bother.
I can't even look at family pictures anymore. They're all on Facebook, and I refuse to join.
It's just become a fucking... Sorry, it's wearing old people's home, basically.
What's wrong with fucking?
Yeah.
Nothing at all. Long as you're legal about it.
Yeah, pretty much. I'll tell you who swears in the mumble room. Is Alan Jude swears in the mumble room all the frickin' time. He is
I just fucking swore in the mumble room. What are you talking about?
This is an HPR show, man. Swearing is okay.
You may think that, like, you see people on YouTube and you say, oh, that person probably never swears. Alan Spatry swears all the time in mumble. He swears non-stop, you know, all the time.
It's okay. It's not FM. It's not digital TV. You can swear all you want over Wi-Fi.
And it's not tagged safe for work. This is not a family-friendly podcast.
Yeah, this is not a family-friendly podcast. I'm sure when this goes out over Hacker Public Radio, it will be tagged as adult.
Yeah, well, they probably think you guys are hacking into stuff for 30 hours anyway. I never understood what Hackathon meant.
Well, I installed Gen 2 in the process of the... I installed Gen 2 and Slackware in the process of the show.
I installed Arch this morning. So, I mean,
yeah, but that only takes like 20 minutes.
Is that what
I've installed a couple packages.
That's true.
I'm on elementary OS. I'm dual booting with Windows 8.1. I've just done a video. So I guess that means I've been hacking as well. Using OpenShot.
Generally, when it comes to language on either doing like whatever podcast I'm on, usually if no one else will curse, then I will keep it family friendly because I'll just automatically assume it is. But the minute someone starts, it just becomes an avalanche of curse words.
It's on.
It's all fucking going.
Exactly.
I'm going to say, Chris Last will know the world record on podcasts. I'm going to go and see what he says in chat. I'll still stand.
So, what's the purpose of swearing?
I have no idea. Just to relieve energy, I guess. I don't know.
Someone was telling me that the words mean nothing, and I responded to him by saying that if the words mean nothing, why do you say them?
The words don't mean nothing. They mean something. They're usually exclamations to put emphasis upon other words. They don't mean nothing. Anybody that tells you that fuck doesn't mean anything doesn't know what they're talking about. It has multiple meanings. It's like every other word in the English language, like mayonnaise. It's the stuff you put on bread, and it could mean, you know, like mayonnaise a lot of people in here.
And it's great on fries.
Or you could... Ew. Or, like, say I was discussing... say I had an install problem, right? We'll use Fedora as an example, as that's what I'm running. Like, I don't know, say the bootloader didn't install correctly, and I had a whole bunch of problems with that, right? Now, if I said, oh, the bootloader didn't install, you know, ah, man, that makes me upset. By me saying I'm upset, then you'd know I'm upset. But if I said the fucking bootloader didn't install, I am pissed, then you would know exactly how upset I am.
Yeah, and you wouldn't even have to add the part on the end that said I'm pissed.
Yeah.
But you can say words that sound angry and not use those words also.
Yes, but so how many stupid people are going to know those words?
What it really comes down to is that there is no such thing as a bad word. There are bad people, there are bad intentions, but a word in and of itself cannot be bad.
You can use it badly.
Also, if you were to say to me, hey, could you not curse, that offends me, then I wouldn't do it.
But if you told that to me, I'd tell you to go to hell.
Now, to put it in perspective, the word bastard is a very interesting one that offends many people. In Turkish, if I remember right, the word for bastard is peach. Now, think about how that could be used in a different context that would call someone a bastard without them even realizing. Do the words mean anything? That's exactly it. The words actually mean anything inherently, or do they mean what we attribute to them? You can't have a bad word, but you can certainly have a bad intention.
Although my favorite insult does not use any curse words, and you will hear it anytime you go below southern Indiana, and it is bless your heart, or bless your soul.
I love that one.
I've got an answer to the world record for the longest ever podcast running continuously and being recorded. It's 74 hours.
Amateurs.
ChatChat.com question for the record for the longest podcast recorded, Sega. ChatChat.
Yeah, and if it played music, fail.
Yeah, they've been talking the whole time.
So, Chris USA, does cursing offend you?
Not much offends me personally. I offend a lot of other people because I'm quite opinionated, but normally I don't mean anything personally towards that person if I'm saying something. And if people can actually understand that, it's normally not an issue. I normally end up being friends with people for years.
I'm saying if it does, if it actually does, then I won't do it.
There's a couple curse words that really bother me. I'm a Christian, so whenever you take the name of the Lord in vain, that bothers me a lot. And the F word.
All right, then, out of respect, I will refrain from doing so.
Whenever I'm in the channel.
The question that occurs to me, of course, is which name?
Like when people say, oh my G or JC in a derogatory manner.
Or GD.
Yeah.
I don't find it to be so much a derogatory manner so much as an exclamation of strength. But that's me personally.
But you're still using it derogatory, though.
Are you fine with holy in front of other words?
Well, if you're in the proper context, like saying Jesus Christ lived during the Jesus, whom people called the Christ, lived during such and such a period of time, and people believed that he was the Messiah, that's different than just saying holy. I don't want to say that because I believe it's swearing. It's saying derogatory.
How do you feel about holy 48-hour podcast, Batman?
I don't care about that. That's fine.
If we were to break the
world record, you would probably take offense to something like holy shit.
I think we should go for the world record and break it in 72.
Not really. But
I'm just wondering because my parents would, and my mother would probably take offense to the holy whatever Batman.
50, did you ever come back from getting your beer last night?
No, he did not.
I came back about 4 a.m., I guess.
I fell asleep about 8 o'clock at night because I'd been up the night before. It hit me about 8 in the evening. I got up at 4 o'clock in the morning and I was just gone.
Now, 50 took a detour to somewhere that he laid down. He got up, got a beer, and got back on.
Well, I must have got the beer because I don't have any now.
Yeah, I was talking to you around that time.
So technically, I'm just wondering who would actually qualify. Like, has anyone actually been in the room the whole time and actually been talking? Has anyone, roughly, haven't left the room?
Soundchaser would be the closest there.
Yeah, Soundchaser, you might be the one that might be going for the world record.
Hey, why don't you check? Stop it, listen to it all, and then start it again.
That's a good way of doing it.
Let us know.
Well, technically, you've actually got a recording, so it's quite easy to prove. Because this big continuous recording, if we can listen to records, can just listen to it and verify. That'd be a fun job.
Well, we just have to splice it together and make it look good.
Records is harder than just submitting it to them.
There must be a way of actually doing it, though.
Yeah, you have to have a sitting dignitary. You have to have someone from the Guinness Book of World Records, and I can't remember. There's a couple other ways of doing it, but you have to have at least those.
And you have to give them time to get the publicity involved.
Well, that's all right. What you do is just go and contact Guinness World Records and say, we're going to do this for 72 hours. And go for it. Do this again, and we're going to do this again next week, guys. Just joking.
Why are you joking?
Hey, 5150.
Yes, sir.
What does that name mean?
I took it from the original IBM PC, Model 5150. When I first got into podcasting, I had the idea that I might do videos or YouTube videos or something on my antique computer collection. Never have got around to doing that yet.
I knew that from somewhere. I just couldn't place where I knew it from.
Well, people ask it all the time. I tell you what, though, I would like to find that son of a gun who filled the space between my ears all full of cotton last night.
Your wife.
No, that's just how I felt ever since I got up this morning. It's like, it's been kind of hard to focus.
So you turned into a cotton picker?
You could say that.
So, wait a minute. It sounds to me like you've been drinking, and the solution would be not to drink.
That's not a solution.
That's just logic.
Nah, it couldn't be that.
If you don't want to wake up with a hangover, don't drink. That's pretty sound logic.
I feel like it's not fun. Hangover sometimes, not drink.
Yeah, but at least people who don't drink and have fun can remember what they've done.
I ever once got drunk and not remembered what I did. And it was my
20th. No, wait.
That's kind of my curse as well. I remember every idiotic thing I did.
Yeah.
I remember the times when I've been drunk way better than the times when I'm sober, and I wish it was the other way around.
Yeah, I probably do too, but see, the only times I really drink, and I didn't drink at all this New Year's, but it was New Year's Eve and Christmas, or someone's birthday. So that's probably why you remember those sort of times, mostly. So it was all psychological.
I just don't get drunk anymore.
Wait a minute, back up. People who don't drink have fun? I just can't fathom that.
Yeah, it's like some time.
That happens. I have fun and I don't drink.
Yeah, I had fun. I had more fun when I was drinking. I was playing sports.
I forget who said it, but why. It might have been... I'm sorry, I stepped all over you on that one.
That's right, it's the lag. Sometimes I'm interrupting and I'm not.
He's got lag. It doesn't count when you step on him.
I think it might have been Winston Churchill, but I'm probably very wrong on that one. Yeah, I think I am wrong on that one. But the quote goes, I feel sorry for people who don't drink, because when they wake up, that's as good as they're going to feel all day.
No, I think that was W.C. Fields.
Yeah, you're right there.
No, Churchill is the one that this lady, somebody who we always argued with at dinners and stuff, came up to him and said, Mr. Churchill, you're drunk, sir. And he says, that's true. But tomorrow morning, I'll be sober and you'll still be ugly.
I believe it was to the same woman. He said, or she said to him, if you were my husband, I would poison the tea you're drinking. And he said, madam, if I were your husband, I would drink it gladly.
Sex is always best when you're drunk because you always forget who they are in the morning. Something.
Oh, you think you boys could figure out something better to talk about than drinking?
Yeah, I know.
That's what you do when you're talking. Maybe you should drink some more food. So you can talk. screw food. I just ate. I don't want to be hungry again.
Yeah, there seemed, at least when I was on, there seemed to be for the New Year's Eve show, there seemed to be a huge lack of discussion of food like we usually do. It's usually like a little bit of tech between our areas of talking about food.
Yeah. I tried to start one of those discussions last night in the actual New Year's show, and you know, no one would take it. Although at least for this after thing, we had a little bit of a food thing earlier, some of us, but it's not been much, and it's kind of a shame because despite what certain people seem to think, I think the food topics. Some people said some stuff that was a bit it doesn't sound very nice, but in general, I think the food topics on the thing last time was pretty good, and some of them made things quite interesting, some of the things that were said and so on, but for some reason people decided, oh, we're not going to do those are food topics, but food topics are good, it's what we can all kind of talk about, we all eat, don't we, and you know, we might not eat the same thing and we might not like the same thing, but it really does start a good topic off what can do, but there aren't any takers.
I want to go eat sushi now, but if I leave I'll miss this awesome conversation about food.
Actually, yeah, Cobra, it was you and me, wasn't it? That we had a little food thing earlier, and maybe someone else. I think it was you. But whatever it was, anyway.
What are you hackers still doing here?
I'm just saying, I lost the world record on a podcast. We worked it out as it's 72 hours, and it's done by some people called, I can't remember. But you have to have someone from Guinness World Records here. I suppose you can always prove it's recorded.
We're running out of content, so now we're just talking.
We're repeating content.
Could be worse.
Could just be the same hour on repeat.
What? You should do, why don't you guys go to bed?
It's only 1 o'clock in the
Some night. Of us have already been to bed and come back.
Again, we're setting a precedence here. We're going to have to do this for 36, 48 hours next year.
So what you have to do is go and get Guinness World Records in, get them officially to come in and sit in, because that's apparently how you get into the record books. And it's 72 hours. Go for it.
And by the way,
I say we do.
If they have to wait until next year to set a precedence, why don't we just keep this going until next year?
This server's up 24/7, 365 days a year, so you can do it whenever.
They normally just do the podcast and you don't leave. You guys realize you ruin it for me if you do that, because the only reason I use this room is you guys are never here when you're doing your podcast, so I actually chat with people.
There's plenty of rooms.
The question is will the server be able to handle that much audio, meaning space-wise?
Quite a large server, I think.
Server doesn't record. It's just local clients that record, right?
Well, the maintainer of the server always has to, this time of year, he always has to pay more for 100 connections just in case. I think the normal limit is around 20. So right now, we would not be able to have this going on with 23 clients.
So, does anybody really know how much of a pain in the butt it is to set up Murmur?
I've got one. It's running on a Raspberry Pi.
I would stick one on a Linode.
It's real simple to set up. Just do a Google search for how to mumble or murmur, and you'll find the instructions. The one I found was for Debian, and then I think it also included for CentOS.
You know, I wonder how hard it would be to make a BBS for the Raspberry Pi.
BBS? We don't live in the 1920s anymore.
The 1990s.
I know. I was being a little bit over-exaggeration.
I remember trying to get games off cassette tape. That's how old I am.
I remember pirating games on cassette tape.
Yeah, I did that.
I remember pirating games on a photocopier.
I remember when there was no photocopiers, period.
Ah, you kids. I remember when we didn't even have water. We had to suck it out of mud.
Yeah, the PCs were like 16 kilobyte things. Should I have Atari ST?
I thought 330 had gone to bed or work.
That didn't work both ends.
I think the only reason people are coming back is people are still in here. Hey, this room needs an AFK room. We need to talk to an admin. OpenSpeak, the one thing that's always annoyed me about OpenSpeak is the only freaking mumble server around that doesn't have an AFK room. So if people want to idle, they can idle in there.
Why don't you just minimize your client and then you won't see them?
Yeah, but the whole point is, if you have a large amount of people, this happens and used to happen in cheaper broadcasting, you have 20 people in a mumble server, and then people just leave and don't know if they're active or not. Because if they go, we actually taught them to go into the AFK, and once they started doing it, they could just stay AFK the whole day, and then they'd just pop back into the lounge or whatever the room was.
That's too much effort. I don't care about that stuff. It only bugs you, so it's your problem.
It's pretty easy to make a room called AFK, and people won't use it anyway, I'm picking. Most people in here leave straight away after a podcast, and you don't never see them again for like 6 months.
Yeah, but the podcast is still going, so, you know, they might walk back in. They don't want to lose their slot.
A lot won't even know that this is happening, of course, but, yeah.
Sure. At least the live view looks quite good at the moment. OpenSpeak.cc. If someone will look at OpenSpeak.cc and go, oh, my God, there's like 20 people in here. No, not really.
Just lies. I gotta go get some laundry out.
Actually, somebody might, like, find out about this data and think, like, oh, if only I'd known that this was going on, I would have gone on it, but, well, too late then.
I actually know quite a few. Stopping recording! Recording stopping! Singing! No!
Oh, that's one of the bots, but I think Ken's apparently still recording, and is anyone else?
You're fine. That was me.
It's the recording stops as well, either.
I think that last segment I was recording was like 6 hours.
Maybe you should just go, has stopped, and be done with it.
No, it should be two recordings.
I'm shutting down my stuff by no later than 11 p.m. Eastern time tonight, so the MP3 stream will be gone, and I will stop recording at 11 around that time. That's the time I'll have to go to bed.
How many people you've had on the MP3 stream?
How many can we fit, or how many were there?
How many were there on the...
I think I seen a maximum. I think the maximum I seen when I was watching it was there was a total of around 67, and that was about 30% MP3 to versus 70%, OGG.
Soundchase was still recording, isn't he?
It's hit the hour. He just got the 2nd of January.
That was me an hour ago. Now it's, that's one, just gone past 1 a.m. here.
Or are we going to do it like last night, where we just announced where it's become a new day in all the countries again?
No. Just, if anything, just people who are on chatting now, because we've done that.
No, but we should still mention that we're doing this for a cause. The Accessible Computing Foundation needs your help.
Well, yeah, I suppose we sort of are. I mean, there's more people carrying on, but sure, the Orca Indiegogo campaign that could do with more money, and he talked a lot about that when he was on, obviously. But yeah, Orca, I think I said something like this earlier. Yeah, I did something like this earlier. The thing with Orca or something like that is, of course, people who, things might happen to us that I can see, we might end up blind as well, and then Orca will be useful. So yeah, it'll be a good project to put money into, I think, and try and get them more developers like he's trying to do.
It's almost like an insurance policy. Just in case you go blind, you might still want to use a computer.
No, not just that. I met blind Linux users, actually, or people who were interested. Yeah, Linux users. I met one last year, and I'm sorry, 2012, and he wants help with his computer issue, and somebody in December as well, and just like anyone else, really, it's just blind. A lot of these people, I think,
Just tell them to read the manual.
It's good that something like Orca makes a computer accessible, because they can apply to emails and all the rest and that kind of thing. So,
it really is, especially when you consider that in reality, a lot of the manuals for various computer programs are not available in Braille. Not to mention a lot of the help manuals and similar stuff. They're just not available. And so you're either left with OCR or you're left with ebooks. And as much as I like the idea of having the physical book, sometimes an ebook is just easier to parse for screen scraping.
Oh, you're saying it makes ebooks accessible as well? Is that what you're saying?
There's no reason it can't.
Obviously a physical book, like you just said, that you can't really make that accessible as such. No, I mean, well, it's Braille, but I mean the normal physical book.
There are systems by which you can scan it in, OCR the text, and have it read out. And there are such systems that can be obtained, but it's not exactly easy. Of course, there are also audiobooks, but finding an audiobook for a technical manual is not that great.
Yeah, is Soundchaser still recording? He is, isn't he?
It's like reading a technical manual, not that great.
Depends on the technical manual.
I don't know, I tried reading CCN. ENT, that's really, really boring.
Try reading law.
I'll be even more boring.
It's a hobby of mine. It's actually quite useful. Cures insomnia.
Oh, I can understand that.
Chatter is going to work, apparently, or well, he's just disconnected.
So going on to something that was discussed last night, and something I was talking about earlier, I'm looking at the idea of putting a BBS on a Raspberry Pi. I know it seems a bit weird, but it's also not your classic BBS necessarily.
Have you Googled for that?
Not entirely. I'm actually looking at a specific BBS to put on there. It's open source, sources available, basic libraries are available, and it runs on Linux, DOS, and Windows.
If it's available in Debian or Arch repos, you can, I'm sure you can do it. It's just like any other computer.
It really is, and my main reason for doing that, I'm not sure if anybody here was available when I was talking about Rachel.
No, I wasn't here for that.
All right, Rachel is a project that puts together a multitude of open resources from around the internet, including a small Wikipedia version called Wikipedia for Schools, a small subset of Khan Academy videos, a variety of textbooks and ebooks, including a good many ebooks from the Gutenberg Project, all together on a collection that can fit on a SIM card or a USB thumb drive or whatever, and then can be served out over a hotspot to an area or a group of people allowing use. Let me post a link to an example site of it on the internet here.
Oh, last night when we were talking about coyotes, like after I hopped off here and I went to let the dog outside before going to sleep, guess what I hear?
A possum.
Exactly.
You guys get possums in the U.S.
Yeah, but we don't have the possums you have. We have opossums. They're mean, they're ugly, and they're like the only marsupials we have.
Yeah, kind of like a redneck population.
Yeah, I want to get to it. They're quite bad. I'm a big fan of possums. Quite big here. Those have got no predators.
What BBS package are you looking at running?
I'm looking at a little one called Synchronet.
Let me Google that for you.
So, how long is this thing going to last for?
Well, it hasn't stopped yet.
Whenever the last person stops recording.
Well, I'm just going to go and reboot into Windows. I'll be right back.
All right, cool. It's already been done.
Doesn't look like he provides any instructions.
No, but the main reason I was looking at that, number one, is so that on something like a Raspberry Pi, you could have not only the original HTTP stuff, but also have the BBS set up to allow NewsNet, allow FTP, etc., and give a basic BBS feel so that somebody with an older computer or any number of other things can access over very, very slow connections. So even if you have just a very basic wireless connection or a basic dial-up connection to the system in place, you can still access it. One thing we were talking about is that the Rachel project, the way it's set up, has books that can be of a lot of use, not only for education, but also for survival. It's almost like all of the books you'd ever need to rebuild civilization. Now, part of the advantage on that is, in a disaster, if you know, an extended period of time you have to survive somewhere, a lot of the information can be quite useful. And in addition, if you want communities to talk to each other, you can put up a small hotspot like this, in addition to putting up a BBS on the Pi, since you have enough extra space, to allow community communication. Not to mention the possibility of using it over packet radio, which they also mention on this one.
Now that would be awesome.
I'd also love to see it done over something like, well, here's an odd thought, GMRS packet radio. Keep in mind also, as far as community building, the Synchronet package also provides email services, NewsNet services, and a variety of other stuff like IRC, Gopher, and Finger.
You're really making me want to get a Pi just to do this.
Hey, I'm not going to argue with it.
Everyone should have a Pi or two.
Indeed they should.
I have one, but I haven't really done much with it yet.
I've got a decent Raspbian install and a bunch of other stuff loaded on there.
One of mine is currently a Icecast server for a couple podcasts and the Mumble server I mentioned earlier. And another one I have set up as a torrent server.
That's kind of what I was thinking, is setting up a few, use getting a few of them, setting up little servers, like, you know, a web server, Icecast server, torrent server.
Only thing with the Pi, though, is that it runs, well, yeah, it runs certain non-free software as well, so So the FSF actually will recommend people, they'll tell people not to get a Pi for that reason. Because it has certain, I think it's like the BIOS or whatever in there as well. But other than that, it's quite free software, other than these little things. But yeah.
That was true when it came out. Didn't they manage to get that opened up, though? Because I remember the makers of the Pi saying they were trying to get it opened up.
They have to leave it closed to restrict the use of codecs and similar things that they didn't pay for.
Yeah, so it's not 1 cent free hardware, but nearly.
Well, that bites. I wonder if there are any alternatives, because, I mean, definitely for setting up little servers and that, you don't really have to be too worried about codecs and stuff, so...
Look at the BeagleBoard Black.
Look at the what?
The BeagleBoard Black. Sorry, BeagleBone Black.
Yeah, I see that.
Yeah, yeah, there's the BeagleBoard, and there's... I think there's a few other ones, really, as well, that are even less known out there. But you've got to, like, find them or whatever.
Now, the BeagleBone Black also has the 2 gigs built in for storage, and then you can add other stuff to it, of course. I also like that it uses a barrel plug as opposed to a USB plug, which, granted, the USB plugs are very common, they're very usable, but, nonetheless, it's also not exactly the easiest thing to integrate with.
Greybeard, are you in the Mumble? I'll have to disagree about the file server for the Pi, because I've got a Samba server running also. I forgot about it. It does fine for home usage.
For home usage, there's no problem there. I mean, it'll do fine. It's got a decent USB setup, and that's the biggest thing. Everything is going through USB.
Mr. Jackson, you don't need video except for the initial setup.
For that matter, video is easy enough to use on most of these devices anyway.
Greybeard, the Model 2 has 2 USB ports. And then you're going to need one of them, obviously, for a keyboard and a monitor on the initial setup, and it can be ran headless after that, and then you can plug in your drives, or you can use a USB hub and attach as many drives as your hub allows.
That's a Model B, and as far as USB hubs, I picked one up. I think it's a 15-port USB hub for $15.
So have either of you heard about the Dead Drop Drive project?
I'm familiar with the overall concept, but I don't think I've heard about a project involving it.
Well, there's a website. I will find it here in a minute. But what people were doing, and they still might be, I don't know. I saw this maybe a year ago or so, and what people were doing is they were taking USB drives, taking the case apart, wrapping the actual thumb drive in a tape and like multiple layers, and then like pretty much making it waterproof with enough tape and everything. And they were finding holes in like brick walls, and taking QuickCrete, putting it in the hole, jamming the thumb drive in there, and then putting, you know, like a rubber cap or something on the plug so water wouldn't get to the actual circuitry, and just leaving it. And with the app that they had, you could pretty much geotag where yours was, and people could just go around and, like, with a laptop or whatever, and plug a cable into it, plug another cable into the laptop, and just get whatever files are on it. I thought it was actually really cool.
Oh, so it's mounted into a wall with the USB plug exposed.
Yes.
Not a bad idea. Well, actually, I can think of a few reasons it would be a bad idea.
Yeah, there's always, like, someone could just be a dick, sorry, and, just snap off the end for, you know, their own personal bits of giggles. Well, or someone Jackson could put puts something terrible on there.
Yeah, that's what Mr. Jackson said, it's a virus drop.
Or, for that matter, they could put some really upsetting porn on there.
Mm-hmm. But if you wanted to just leave files, like, you know, just like a dump of books or something, just make it all read-only, you know, to where no one else could write to it. But then again, someone could just format it.
I think I'd prefer a file drop where it's accessible over Wi-Fi, powered over solar.
That'd be awesome, too.
Basically a little hack-in-the-box or a pirate box system.
I actually thought about setting something like that up and just, like, putting it either in my house or, you know, somewhere else nicely weather sealed. Put a bunch of like public domain books on it and just let people get them whenever they want to. I think that'd be kind of cool.
See, I thought
Rachel would be ideal for that.
So I originally thought when you started talking, Pegwell, I thought you were originally talking about Strongbox, which was actually the last thing that Aaron Swartz was working on, which was a way to transfer data anonymously.
Really, in a way that would be more of a live drop than a dead drop, though, you think about it.
Yeah, but I just think it'd be cool to just be somewhere in any way you could have a repository of books that people could just get, you know? I think that'd be amazing. Like, other than, you know, the Gutenberg Project. Just a physical location someone could like either hook into or use Wi-Fi to get books for free.
And more importantly than that, I'm going to go pick up food. I just got finished ordering and stuff, so I'll be AFK in the channel and back in about 30-ish minutes. But I see the guy who got really pissed off for people AFKing in channel is gone.
Yeah, if you're looking at a drop like that, especially over Wi-Fi, take a look at the Rachel project that I linked to earlier. It has a selection of Gutenberg stuff. It also has a selection of books. Let me see if I can take a look at some of these on here. A selection of books that has the OLPC educational packages. It has World Literature eBooks, which is essentially Gutenberg. It has K-12 textbooks, including teacher's editions. It has healthcare and medical videos. It has a good selection of the Hesperian health guides. If nobody's familiar with those are awesome and always worth a read.
Where's this link at?
I'll link it in again. Now that is an install of Rachel running on the web. You can also get a copy of that for the Pi or a copy of that for a Windows computer. Frankly, if you put the files up directly on an HTTP server, it works fine. It just doesn't have the functionality for search.
There's an extra stash at the end, but I got rid of that and then I go onto the page.
Yeah, I put another link in there without the slash.
Actually, I should get a hold of 330 and see if he doesn't want to help me with this.
Frankly, I think there are a lot of areas and communities where this would be rather handy. Places where people may have a cell phone they can access over Wi-Fi. And most of the videos are in H.264. Almost any phone made in the last 3 years can access H.264 directly and play any of the videos, and they're available for direct download as well.
I'm having a look at this. I don't know, it's like, why haven't you just gone to sort of two pages here? But it matches the UK school curriculum, is that correct? I mean, it says so on the page I got up, the index.
Are you talking about the Wikipedia for schools?
Yeah, that.
That was actually done by a non-profit organization. They took a lot of Wikipedia articles, pared them down, put in a decent set of censorship, and categorized them according to actual school curriculum categories.
Yes, and it's done on the UK, so the ones that's interesting. But
yes, it's essentially made to interact with a school curriculum so that it can be used throughout a school. Even if there's no internet connection, you still have most of Wikipedia, minus the important things like the references.
Yeah, it's like a kid's Wikipedia, isn't it? I mean, I'm just starting to have a look at this, so.
If you look down further on the original page I linked, you'll also find the K-12 STEM textbooks. They also include packages of Scratch for Windows, Linux, Ubuntu at least, and Mac OS.
So I don't know if we saw on the IRC, somebody said, what's the world record for the world's longest podcast? Apparently it's 70 hours. So I've suggested maybe this year we do a podcast that starts on Christmas Eve and goes all the way through New Year's Day.
Are you serious? Although, yeah, that would be a very long podcast.
That would smash the record. I mean, that's over a week.
But does it count with, but like the guy said earlier, would it matter that, well, you've got different people coming on shifts or whatever, but I guess it's a podcast either way, isn't it?
Jay Lindsay's comment is going to end up like those Korean guys who play a game so long they die.
At least well, I'll well, die doing what I love.
You can have a whole week of podcasting. You better get another computer in case you don't have enough space for all those gigabytes though, of recordings.
I wonder if that would come close to a terabyte.
Depends on what format.
Well, we're at like over 36 hours and I've only used 11 gig of space.
In FLAC.
Man, if we did that, that'd be enough HPR for a year. Ken would be so happy.
And HPR would have so few listeners.
It would actually have to come out on a separate channel. It would actually be a separate release cycle.
Oh yeah, it'll be so much of it. It sounds like you're serious and you weren't just joking there.
Sound chasers.
Although somebody did suggest earlier we could do 3 days, 72 hours, which sounds a bit more normal, but if you really are serious about a week, I'm sure we'd actually work on this on HPR because there's so many different people that you could probably actually do it. Look at this one.
Well, the record is 70 hours. So if we just did 3 days, if it's a question of is when it's podcasted, is it long enough? Doing 3 days might end up being too short because you might lose over 2 hours.
Yeah, well, yeah.
So I just chose a week to say, let's make sure that we get enough material.
Sound Chaser is in charge of next year's show, officially.
You haven't got the idea about how I work, do you? And I just kind of like toss things out there and up the ante every now and then for the fun of it.
Yeah, but this sounds like an idea that could seriously work with HPR. Like, oh, this is a joke, but I mean seriously. Because there is enough people and there would be enough content. You know, you just make it up as you go along, isn't it? That it could probably actually work, this idea, as crazy as it sounds realistically.
Well, it certainly beat the heck out of Leo's 24-hour little piddly thing.
Yes, but next year we need video. Oh, geez, that means I'm going to have to put on pants.
I'm not.
Mumble can do video, can't it?
I don't think it can. Well, maybe it can, but I don't think it can.
It's not supposed to.
What can it or can't it? It's not supposed to, is it? It's supposed to be for like game chat, wasn't it? And then turns out it's being used for podcasts as well. It doesn't do video as far as I know. There's this Jitsi Skype alternative, which we talked about before, didn't we? Which is supposed to be able to do all the stuff, so...
Video is on the future list for Mumble.
Was that feature or future?
Future. As in, not in the current and not in the next version that's in development. Well, past that.
Well, yeah. That's what it's like with a lot of open source projects, really. Things will get pushed forward, or the idea will. It's like, no, not next release, but maybe the one after, or maybe the one after that.
It would be interesting. Jitsi would not be a bad way to go if you can do enough of a conference call with it, but I think it does support that. It would be interesting if enough people actually had it and could use it. But then again, it's actually pretty much open standard, so you wouldn't have to use Jitsi itself.
Yes, and it needs to be in distros. It's not in all distros, in the repos, which I know, well, at least not certain distros. I think it's only been around probably a few years, actually, because I don't think it's as popular as it should be in a way. It's like... But I don't really, like I said before, I haven't actually used it yet. I just know about it because of this people were mentioning. And actually, I think I've read an article about it probably before that anyway. But anyway, yeah. But yeah, we need something open source, obviously, to do whatever. Otherwise, it wouldn't really be it wouldn't really be in the spirit of the podcast. I think that's the saying type thing.
I think the spirit of the podcast involves using whatever you can get your hands on, especially if it's not supposed to do that.
Well, we don't want to do it on Skype, do we?
Let's see, using Linux to run on a Microsoft service to bash Microsoft. Why not?
Well, not just the Microsoft thing. I mean, I was thinking more because it's a closed source program, but I'm sure there's now the whole it belongs to Microsoft thing as well on top of that more recently, for those who care enough about that.
Well, we could do it over ham radio, but we'd have to watch our language.
So for video, it supports SIP and XMPP and codecs. Audio-wise, it supports Opus, Silk, Speaks, G722, PCMU, PCMA, ILBC, GSM, G729, NXC. And then video, it supports H264, H263-1998, / H263+. And they claim VP8 coming soon. And yes, great, yeah. Greybeard, RTP for audio and video.
But I need somebody to package it in from into Mudir because that hasn't happened. I started this mailing list discussion about that, but it didn't happen. So it's kind of a shame, really, because maybe the next release or something. But that's the thing with community distro as well, is you really do have to find, you know, you have all these packages out there, but you really have to find a volunteer, because everyone's a volunteer, so that means for all the packages as well. You need somebody who's going to volunteer and say, look, I want that package in the distro. And but although it has most of the packages you would expect in general, it's just Jitsi in the repos, it's just Jitsi is missing, which is kind of a shame because of, yeah.
Well, they support, just looking at their list here, they've actually got Ubuntu, Debian, RPM packages, and Arch packages supplied by default.
Yeah, sure.
I got it installed out of my Sabian repositories, which means it's in Gen 2 as well.
Well, just need to do another bug report or whatever and try and get into Mudir 5 repos now because it's too late before. Because trying to get interest before the version freeze, but for new packages, but now it's past that, so I have to try again for the next one.
Well, but your Mudir is RPM based, right?
Well, yeah. I mean, it could probably run a Fedora 1 or you can install it from source or whatever, but, you know, I'm talking about the repos. It's nice to have these kind of packages in the repo itself for easy install, but obviously there's so many packages out there that not all distros are going to have exactly the same packages at that one time because there's so much stuff out there and you need packages to put that in. And I'm not a packager, and I'm not really planning on going through the whole mentoring process and putting in packages for the distro. But that, you know, but for people who want to do something like that, it's quite a nice distro to get involved with in that sense as well, because they have a very nice mentoring process. And I mean, you've got to get a mentor and go through the mentoring process before you even get accepted as a proper packager and so on, but always looking for volunteers for that as well. And I would love, you know, I wouldn't want somebody to put Jitsu in. And to be honest, I think I might have said this on the other news. I think I said this in some other podcast probably before, actually. I personally, actually, I couldn't have any Ubuntu people here now, really, but maybe somebody's listening to this. But this is, with something like Unity, actually, I would like to personally actually see that in more distros, but I think it's going to be even harder now because of the whole, it's going to rely on the thing, and most distros are going to go to Wayland as of this year, I believe. But you know, it would be nice to kind of see something like Unity actually in more distros available, like Cinnamon and Mate now are as well. They're in more distros. And those are in Mudir. Well, they're going to be in Mudir 4. They're in development in the repos of what will become at the moment as well. So that's good. But yeah, Unity is a good one because, I mean, Unity is an interesting one. We talk about interfaces because if you want Unity, if anyone wants Unity, they're pretty much stuck to Ubuntu now, or maybe a distro based on it. And this is kind of a shame. even, and although somebody did try and package it for Fedora and somebody tried for OpenSUSE, but they gave up for technical reasons, I think it was, and now the whole MERV thing, like I was saying, which is probably going to make it even harder to actually get it into any other distros when they're all going Wayland, but I assume, but yeah, that's how it is, I guess.
Well, back at the point, there are RPM packages already out here, which should be easily buildable against Magia, especially because it's pretty much a Java-based application, so it shouldn't be that big of a deal to actually get it set up and rebuild it for Magia. It shouldn't be that hard.
Actually, I'm going to reply to Greybeard here in the podcast quickly. Which distros are going to Wayland, and the whole Ubuntu talking about Wayland first? Well, yeah, I suppose they did talk mainly about Wayland first, but Wayland is from the actual Exalt developers, and I think some people thought Fedora was probably one of the first to have the whole Wayland idea, actually. But Ubuntu did say a lot about that, and they're doing MER instead based on that. So that's that one. As for which distros are going Wayland, I believe it's going to be pretty much every other distro because of upstream projects such as GNOME 3, which has, I believe, only really ported. It's, yeah, for GNOME 3.10, they have experimental Wayland support already. That was part of their goals. And then for GNOME 3.12, which will come out at the end of March, the goal is to have full Wayland support, so that's going Wayland. And I think they haven't really supported MER at all, which is also why which is also partly why Ubuntu is on the old GNOME 3.8 and for Unity at the moment, things like that.
Well, I think most distros other than Fedora haven't actually announced yet when and if they're going Wayland. I mean, most of them are assumed to be going Wayland, but most of them haven't announced it yet.
Well, yeah, it's assumed to go to Wayland, but I agree with that. But I think a lot are probably, to be honest, they're going to be waiting for upstream to, first of all, have proper full support for Wayland, and then quite a few will probably be having a look at a distro such as Fedora, which, you know, tends to make these bigger switches sooner than a lot of other distros, and then they'll probably kind of follow a lot of them. But that's what I believe will happen, and I think it's going to be all happening this year, really. And the whole Exalt developers want people to go Wayland, obviously, because they're not going to be doing Exalt anymore. So yeah, and also the Exalt community are the people who actually started Wayland. It's their project as well, you know. As for MER, I guess it's really just because, well, I guess really the main reason is because they want to have more control over. Well, for Unity, so it can run on phones, TV, the computers, and all the rest of it. And so they need so MER, because apparently Wayland wants to go in a kind of different direction. And so, yeah, MER. And that's another point, actually. Some people don't like the idea that Ubuntu is kind of like its own platform now, but I think that's kind of good that they're doing something different as well, because it'll get more people into desktop Linux over time, or should do, as long as things don't go too wrong over time instead.
You have been listening to Hacker Public Radio at hackerpublicradio.org. We are a community podcast network that releases shows every weekday, Monday through Friday. Today's show, like all our shows, was contributed by a HPR listener like yourself. If you ever considered recording a podcast, then visit our website to find out how easy it really is. Hacker Public Radio was founded by the Digital Dog Pound and the Infonomicon Computer Club. HPR is funded by the Binary Revolution at binrev.com. All BinRev projects are proudly sponsored by Lunar Pages. From shared hosting to custom private clouds, go to lunarpages.com for all your hosting needs. Unless otherwise stated, today's show is released under a Creative Commons Attribution Share Alike 3.0 license.